Morning. It's just after 9. We're going to call the meeting to order. Is there any updates to the agenda?
To you, Mr. Chair. Administration has no updates to the agenda.
Good. Could I get a motion to accept the agenda as presented? Councillor McIler.
I'd like to make a motion to accept the agenda as read. Yes.
Yep. Good. Thank you. All in favour? That is carried. We need a motion for confirmation of minutes for January 8th, page 5, Council Special Meeting. Could I get a motion for that?
I can make a motion to accept the minutes of the special meeting of January the 8th.
Thank you, Councillor Hansen. All in favour? That is carried, and the meeting minutes for January 9th, Council meeting. Deputy Reeve Gautreau.
We do have an error on page 8 of 486 of our agenda, where it says the intersection west of Range Road 281 is supposed to say east of Range Road 281.
Good. So we don't need a motion for that. We just put it in as amendment? Yep. Okay. Now, could we get a motion for the minutes as amended?
So then I'll make that motion to accept the minutes as amended.
Thank you. All in favor? That is carried. We will go to item D1.
Good morning, Reeve and Council. Item D1 is in respect of the 2017 Audit Service Plan. The Municipal Government Act requires that each council must appoint one or more auditors for the municipality under Section 280-1. On September 24, 2013, Council appointed MNP LLP as Rocky View County's auditors for a period of 5 years. MNP has provided the attached 2017 audit service plan to discuss their overall strategy and general arrangements for the audit of the county's 2017 financial statements. MNP's mandate includes completing an audit of the following areas: the county's annual financial statements, supporting information, the Family and Community Support Services Program, and the local authority's pension plan contributions. MNP is in attendance today and will be available to discuss various topics, including fraud, the county's specific needs and expectations, or any other issues or concerns. Council has the opportunity to contact the auditor at any time or direct the undertakings of the auditor. For the purpose of this discussion, Council may choose to move into a committee of the whole in camera. The attached audit service plan outlines how MNP will conduct Rocky View County's 2017 audit. MNP intends to present their audit findings to Council on April 24, 2018. It is in this regard that administration recommends option 1, that the 2017 audit service plan be received as information. I'd be happy to answer any questions, and after that I will have Julie Oliver from MNP come up and present the audit service plan and be available for questions.
You're getting a good day here. I see no questions, so thank you.
I'll bring up Julie Oliver from MNP.
Thank you. Welcome again.
Good morning.
Can I get you to just speak your name for the record, please?
Hi there, I'm Julie Oliver with MNP. I'm here to present the 2017 Audit Service Plan, as Barry indicated there. Seeing mostly new faces here today, I'll take a little bit more time perhaps to identify some terms and such that might be new to you as councillors, given your first term here. In item D1, starting on page 4, you'll note that an audit is meant to be done with integrity and... Oh, sorry. Do you want me to... And one of the key parts of an audit is ensuring that there's open channels of communication throughout the engagement. We have open channels of communication with your management team here, but it's also important to have open channels of communication with council. on page 5, the executive summary there, you'll note that we propose to use $3 million as our overall materiality for audit planning purposes. I'll just speak about materiality for a second in case you were wondering what that was. Materiality is a concept in financial reporting where we determine at what level could all of the accumulated, you know, errors in estimates and disclosures and such come to a level where you're looking at the financial statements and they're no longer of use to the users. They're not representationally faithful to the users anymore. And so $3 million is based on 3% of your gross revenues. Gross revenues is a normal base for municipalities in order to assess materiality. And the range that's normal is between 2 and 4%. So we're right at the middle level. For most municipalities, we're happy to go up to the higher levels. But as the materiality was also $3 million in the prior year and at the mid-range, we felt it was best to leave that level alone for this year. But that's always an area for communication with you. Moving on, for part of that open communication piece here, the topics for discussion in the audit service plan include changes to operations and developments in your financial reporting and regulatory environment. So we're quite aware of the change in council here. We're also aware of the change in the MGA in the past year that's occurred and the impacts that that would have on financial reporting and your systems and such that go into that. Is there anything else that we have that you're aware of that you feel as auditors we need to be aware of in terms of major changes to your operations or your plans for the county?
Actually, if I could, in the past it's been talked about that the information that is given into the auditors is the information that you base your audit from. But I see further on when you get back into page 29 of your audit process, you talk about processes that you kind of measure, and so if there wasn't the full information, you have a process of finding it or of rectifying that and seeing it.
Thank you, Reeve.
I guess that's a question.
Yeah, no, good question, and it's important to have this kind of communication. So you're right. We do audit what's there, and we would call that existence of things that are there on your statement of financial position or occurrence of things that are on your statement of operations. But we also audit for completeness, and so that's the things that might not be there. So we do have processes in place around key risk areas of completeness, such as looking at transactions that happened after the year-end cutoff date to see whether they should have been included before, making some inquiries, doing legal inquiry in terms of looking for things related to lawsuits and other commitments that might occur that way. And then a variety of other things in terms of risk areas of completeness, including your contributed assets, because there's no, you know, dollars spent for what becomes under the control of the municipality. So we do have procedures in place to identify what's not there as well.
Another thing that has been brought up in the past is, you know, the ability to be able to easily find something. So, and I'll be honest, I'm not a numbers guy. I'm just going off memory. And when I read through this yesterday, I thought, you know, these are questions that maybe the public and council would like to hear, that and the format of the budget system, I have noticed a little change in the process, but over the years. But do you notice, as our auditors, substantial change in year to year of the format of the budget? like where it becomes harder to see your way through. This is some of the things we've heard in the past, that the budget is very hard to weigh through and figure out. So from your standpoint, and I know in the notes from the auditors, we've never heard that from the auditors. So I was just wondering why there would be a public perception of that in some cases, or even on council, and is there any reality in that statement? Put it that way. I guess that's the easy way of putting it.
Certainly. Well, the scope of our audit hasn't been specifically to address that specific concern, and I can't address public perception. I can address what we've seen in terms of the budget, and we haven't seen any substantial changes in terms of key processes or ways of reporting the budget that cause any concern from our point of view. Does that answer your question, Reeve?
Yeah, it does. And Councillor Hansen has a question.
there's a bit of interest around potentially unfunded liabilities that the county may have. So during the audit process, how do you ferret out what might be an unfunded liability to make sure that it's being included? When you talked about looking for things that are missing. Maybe a bit of background on that, please. Through the Reeve.
Certainly. So funded liabilities and unfunded liabilities is really a matter that's most important to council and of less importance as to the actual financial reporting. So we actually look to all liabilities, and the definition of a liability would be that an economic resource would need to be, you know, given out in the future with respect to a matter that has already occurred. So you've received goods or services and you need to pay for them at a later time, or there's been a judgment in a lawsuit and you will need to pay for it, or it's likely that there would be a judgment in a lawsuit and you would have to pay for it, so therefore it should be accrued. Now, the funded versus unfunded actually ties a lot into your reserves disclosure and all of those things. So it's not particularly something that we look for whether a liability is funded or unfunded. We're just making sure that all of your liabilities get accrued when it's appropriate and disclosed if it's a significant obligation that a factor hasn't quite occurred to make it something that should be accrued yet.
Deputy Reeve Gautreaux.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Reeve. Just a couple questions I have is, do you do a risk analysis?
Absolutely.
At what in depth do you do a risk analysis?
So we're not looking at perhaps the same risk that management looks at and council looks at in terms of business risk, but we're looking at risk when it comes to financial reporting. So we're looking at the risks of what could cause your financial statements to be materially misstated. So the accumulation of different misstatements would be more than the $3 million dollars that has been assessed as materiality. So we actually have a risk register process where we consider the inherent risk that's in each of the financial statement line items. And so those are the risks that will always be there, regardless of whatever kinds of controls can be applied by your management team. And then we also assess what controls have been applied and whether those address those risks, and continue on then whether our level of work that we should do on it is high, medium, or low. And so the higher the risk, and if there isn't controls to assess the risks that are identified over each financial statement area, and we go line by line, like cash, receivables, down, and consider the risks over each of the assertions, then we would do more work on the areas considered high risk.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry?
Thank you. Just one other question. I know you go by the Canadian Public Sector Accounting Standards, and some people up here may not know what that actually means. How in depth is the Canadian Public Sector Accounting Standards process?
Certainly. Well, the CPA Canada is our governing body for all accounting standards, and they put out all of the standards for whether it be public companies reporting from IFRS or private enterprise, or in your case, the public sector standards. So the auditing standards are actually consistent over all of the different organizations that we would audit, and those are handled under the assurance part of the handbook. The PSUB standards are the accounting or the financial reporting parts of the handbook, and they go in detail over, you know, the different financial reporting areas, particularly that are significant to municipalities, such as revenue recognition is a kind of a different beast for municipalities than it would be for other types of organizations, and how your financial statements are presented in the first place. So there hasn't, as you can tell from later on pages in Section 3 of the Audit Service Plan, the public sector accounting board has been quite active in making recommendations for changes that are coming up over the next several years.
Thank you. I see no further questions, so carry on.
Certainly. Some of the other topics that we like to make sure that we address with you at least annually include fraud. And I know it sounds like a dirty word, but ultimately it's something that we need to have an open air of communication and understanding about how could fraud occur in any organization, including yours. What is your risk of fraud and misstatement? And are there any actual suspected or alleged fraud that council is aware of? So I know as a new council that might be a little bit overwhelming, but it really is important and one of the roles of council to consider how fraud could occur, consider the things that management does, because the other role is the oversight process. So understanding, you know, why they're doing some of the things that they're doing is important in evaluating the management oversight process. So I'll open it up to you. How do you think fraud could occur in your organization?
Councillor McKeiler.
Failure to have adequate controls.
Absolutely.
Bad reporting on finances. So, you know, just to report, I guess you couldn't say just misleading reporting that council could make a decision that ended up in fraudulent.
Sophisticated financial engineering.
Okay. Well, thank you for your feedback. It's good to. Oh dear. No. They were all financiers, and that is how fraud could occur in any organization. In particular, is some risk of misstatement in your financial statements. As I mentioned, revenue recognition can be a tough thing, particularly in things like contributed assets. And we talk about fraud and misstatement together. Not all misstatement is due to fraud, but it's equally damaging, right? So it's risk of fraud or error in your organization there. And so we'd certainly take a higher look at those revenue recognition, deferred revenue type things in terms of how we assess risk of error. Anything else that you think might be high risk?
Not all at once. Come on. There's no bad answers. Yeah, you're asking some pretty hard questions for a Tuesday meeting.
Abuse of expenses.
Abuse of expenses, okay. Good. Okay, and then I also need to ask if there's any actual suspected or alleged fraud that we need to be aware of as your auditors.
I will say, because I don't see another light on, no.
Great. And sorry for those of you that might have been uncomfortable by all of the questions, but it really is meant to set up a relationship where there is an open communication style, and to also remind you that, you know, if something comes up later that you're curious about or has been, you know, bothering you about financial reporting, you're always available to talk to probably through Kent there as... And then through the audit, if you think that it's an audit issue you would like to see addressed or you're curious about, you also have the ability to contact me, and I believe my contact information has been provided as well.
We do have another question, Councillor McKeiler.
Yeah, so I guess what I, you know, from my vantage point and from some of my past lives, I was involved unwillingly in lots of SOX reviews, and so, you know, so preventing fraud, you know, it's fundamentally you can't do it, but you need to have adequate controls, and so it always comes down to, you know, who's checking that, you know, to make sure that, you know, $50 million didn't walk out the front door. And so do we, it's part of your process, I'll get to my question because Greg's staring at me now. So part of my, is part of your process ensuring not only our controls, so what do we have in place, but making recommendations when you see that we don't have a good control in place or we're totally lacking a control.
Absolutely. In that risk process, we identify controls to cover inherent risks that are there in financial statement areas. And if we're not seeing any kind of controls that would cover off those inherent risks, we would first of all have to address it with our audit procedures and do more work. And then secondly, communicate first with management to make sure that we didn't miss something and that there is a control, maybe just not exactly the way that we thought it would be, and evaluate whether that satisfies our requirements. And thirdly, if there is a significant deficiency in internal control, it will be reported in the management letter, which is part of the audit findings report that we will deliver in April to council.
And we have Councillor Hanson.
Through the Reeve, how long has MNP been engaged as auditors for Rocky View County?
So we were appointed as auditors in September of 2013. So this will be our fifth year in doing the audit.
So during that term, have you seen any significant recommendations on the audit reporting that have been implemented by the county?
Oh, I didn't go back and study all of the...
Me neither.
but I don't believe that there is. There's quite a lot of controls and alternate controls and all of that within your organization. So I don't believe, correct me if I'm wrong, that there's been any significant deficiencies in control in the organization. There have... been some errors that, in fact, it was just last year, I believe, that there was an error with respect to contributed assets that was corrected in the year and reported very forthcomingly into the financial statements. And that's a really tough area to capture everything because you didn't actually spend any money. You just got, you know, a control over those resources.
So. Okay. And in those 5 years... have the public accounting standards changed significantly at all? I know the private sector has, but was there sweeping big changes that we had to accommodate in the past 5 years?
So there's different changes every year, but I'm don't believe that any of them were terribly significant. There was a new revenue standard that came in within that period, and there was a liability for contaminated sites standard that came in within that period. But a lot of the financial standards didn't really have a huge impact on the financial reporting of the entity, as well as the ones coming up. Many of them won't have a significant impact on your entity, as you're already, you know, considering. For example, one of the ones coming up is the definition of an asset as being you know, remolded, re-emphasized. And what we've done has always really considered, you know, 99% of what's in there. So.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. I see no lights.
Okay.
Nope.
So the next area for discussion is any specific needs or expectations that council has. Given that this is your first year, maybe I'll just speak to the plan a little bit further and go through the audit service plan, and we'll circle back to that question if we're not answered. Does that sound fair? All right. So as I mentioned, Section 3 of our plan has key changes and developments in various different sectors. You're not going to be largely impacted by many of these. Many of them aren't effective until your 2020 financial statements. The only change that's coming up for 2018 is actually a change in the audit reports, and so really more changes come into upon us, where any key matters in the audit will be disclosed directly in the audit report, which will be a change in reporting for all different sectors, including public sector. So key responsibilities are outlined in Section 4, including management's responsibilities for fair presentation of the financial statements, the actual selection of the accounting policies, making sure the disclosure is significant, and the actual safeguarding of the assets. And that's where Councillor McKeiler has been, you know, asking about quite a bit in terms of controls. The establishment and maintenance of policies, reporting systems, and controls firmly lies in management's responsibility area. Moving on to our responsibilities as your auditor, we will report on whether the statements present fairly, in all material respects, the financial position, results of operation, and cash flows in accordance with public sector standards. We will provide reasonable assurance of detecting misstatements, but we can never provide absolute assurance without it being cost prohibitive. So what that means is that we will examine on a test basis the amounts and disclosures within the financial statements to ensure that we can say that they present fairly your financial results. We will also assess the appropriateness of any accounting policies and any accounting policy changes. Council responsibilities, given your first year in this role, that might be interesting for you to review in detail. And again, if you have any questions on that, Kent's a great resource for you as well. You're welcome to reach out to me if you think it's a question of the auditor. And then in terms of deliverables, what we're going to do is today in your packages, we've informed you of effect and timing of new and proposed financial reporting requirements. So that's met. We'll assist you to plan and implement new financial reporting requirements. And again, what's coming up for 2018 is really more about the auditor's requirements than yours. We'll communicate with council, and we will attend council meetings as appropriate. So there's one other council meeting that we plan on attending, and that's when we deliver the audit findings report to you. And that will be near the end of April. The timeline will be coming up in the materials here. And we will issue our independent auditor's reports upon completion. The timetable, as I mentioned, we'll be starting our year-end procedures on March 12th and go over draft things with management April 10th and come to report to you on April 24th. Independence is an important concept for an auditor. It's very important that we be independent, and we can confirm that we do not have any relationships with council or management that would cause impairment of our independence. The fees are as quoted in the original audit quote. And that's pretty much it for what I had to go over. So just coming back to Councillor Henn, I can't remember which one of you mentioned earlier about the risk. Maybe it was Councillor Gautreaux. The risks in the later appendix where we've outlined where we think risks are in the different financial statement areas. Is there anything in specifically that specific needs or expectations of the audit?
Councillor Hansen.
Just looking at the fees versus the testing, approximately what percentage of our transactions are being tested with this much auditing effort?
So we actually don't calculate the percentage of things. It's not, we feel, a relevant standard. It's very statistical, our sampling methodologies, where we take the materiality and we take the population, the value of the population, divide the population by the materiality, and then multiply it by a risk factor, depending on whether we assess it as high, medium, or low risk, to calculate the number of sample sizes. And then we use like random number generators and such for calculating which ones we're going to look at. So statistically speaking, and it's been covered like by scholars and other accounting firms in terms of that statistical probability, if there were an error, we would catch it.
All right. So is this enough, in your opinion, is this enough level of effort to do a proper audit of Rocky View County?
Absolutely. We can't sign the audit report unless we think that the audit evidence is sufficient and appropriate to cover the assertions.
Thank you. I will do a motion.
Yeah, I was just asking him to do a motion to accept for information.
That we accept the report from MNP for information.
Seeing no questions, all in favor? That is carried. We'll go to D2. Thank you, by the way, for your in-depth report and your openness. D2, Mr. Bars.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Council. Item D2 is to appoint Council representatives to the Calgary Metropolitan Regional Board. On January 1st, 2018, the fairly significant event at the Calgary Metropolitan Regional Board became effective. The board has 10 member municipalities that are identified in the regulation, and you can see the names on the screen, and there is a map there to the left. The county is one of the members of the board, and as such, we must appoint a representative to the board. I wanted just to take a moment to bring up a few of the items and update you on a few of the items that are transpiring as we speak. So with the board adoption and the regulation coming into effect, the regulation states that within 3 years, so by January 1st, 2021, the board must adopt and then recommend to the Minister of Municipal Affairs a growth plan. And the growth plan is to have an integrated approach to planning in the Calgary region. And it's to identify an overall development pattern that will also allow for the identification of required future infrastructure. With the growth plan, there is the need to develop servicing plans or plans. The regulation specifically identifies the items that you see on the screen there. It does also allow the board the latitude to undertake other servicing plans if it so chooses. So, for example, you know, recreation or policing might be matters that the board wishes to address, well, I suppose immediately or over time. So one of the interesting things about the regulation that it says any statutory plan, bylaw, municipal agreement adopted as of last January 1st must be consistent with this future growth plan that doesn't actually yet exist. The regulation allows for statutory plans and bylaws and municipal agreements adopted prior to January 1st to remain in effect. So colloquially, they're grandfathered. If we don't change them, they're still in effect and they are the governing document, and the board wouldn't go in and change those either. But anything new or anything amended must be consistent with the growth plan, and if it is inconsistent, it's deemed to be invalid. And so of course, that leads to, well, how do you determine consistency? So the regulation also requires that new or amended statutory plans, it doesn't address bylaws or municipal agreements, but it says new or amended statutory plans must undergo objective evaluation and approval by the board. So I think one of the significances of this is that some of the authority that was allowed to municipal governments has been transferred in the region, at least, to the board. The regulation states that the board must develop what's called a regional evaluation framework. And that's a process for determining what plans, statutory plans, need to go in front of the board. So new, but all new, that would be a question that we don't know yet. Amended, maybe it depends on the degree of amendment. We don't know that yet either. The REF, or Regional Evaluation Framework, needs to outline a process of how the review is going to take place, who's going to do it, how is it going to be paid for, what criteria might they use to evaluate the plan. And then finally, the REF has to outline a voting method to confirm the statutory plan is valid or invalid. And the regulation does give direction on the ultimate voting, but there can be a process in there. So until the REF and the growth plan are developed, because you can imagine there's some uncertainty as to whether an ASP must be submitted for approval or whether indeed it's even valid what councils in the region have adopted. So one of the ways that board members decided, even before the board was constituted, is that they try and address this uncertainty by developing an interim growth plan. And member municipalities have been working on that. Technical representatives that have been reporting to the CAOs have been working on that. And they've agreed that they were going to do an interim growth plan and have it ready for board review and recommendation to the minister for approval by September 2018. And any statutory plan that is consistent with that interim growth plan would remain in effect once the final growth and servicing plan is adopted. So what it does in effect is it shrinks that uncertainty period down into the September period. Municipal Affairs has provided funding for that. Requests for proposals were issued January 12th. One of the significant things about it is it doesn't allow for any meaningful public engagement. There'll be some public information sessions, but there really can be no opportunity for public input. So I think when we go to the final growth plan, one of the things that the administration would recommend is that, you know, we do advocate for a robust public engagement process as part of development of the final plan, and that the interim growth plan doesn't just roll over to become the final growth plan. I think you go back to square one and you start anew and fresh. As council is aware, that the regulation does say that the board shall strive for consensus, but if a decision is required, a positive decision requires two-thirds of the representatives with two-thirds of the population. So this has always been a long-standing county concern and contention, that it does give Calgary the ability to say no to any particular issue before the growth board. Calgary does, though, need to get two-thirds of the growth board members to support an initiative that they are trying to propose. The regulation and act require that the county appoint an elected representative and an alternative, or it allows for an alternative. The reason you would want an alternative is, for some reason, the regulation states that if you don't show up or you even abstain, you're considered to vote positively for whatever's before the board. The other challenge perhaps for the representative may be that the representative can present the municipality's views and perspective on an issue, but they have a fiduciary duty to vote in the interests of the board as a whole. So that may or may not provide challenges over time to whoever the representatives are. Wrong way. So today, administration is making a recommendation on who should be our appointed representative. We don't know the amount of work that this is going to involve, but it could be substantive. The non-voted appointed chair has suggested that there be at least one board meeting a month with a break over the summer. He, being Mr. Chris Sheard, has also suggested that there would be two subcommittees and that they would probably meet once a month once they get rolling. And all of those would be require political representation with administrative support to those meetings. So substantive number this year, 2019, it could be up to 30 meetings, perhaps, involving council members. Because the amount of work is not known, administration considered, should you appoint the Reeve as the office, so if whoever becomes Reeve automatically becomes the board representative, or should you have the flexibility to appoint someone else outside of the Reeve or the Reeve, but as that individual to be the board representative. For the moment, we're suggesting you defer that until we understand better about the mechanics of the board. And so administration is recommending that that the Reeve Belkey be appointed as the interim county representative and that Deputy Reeve Gautreau be appointed as the interim alternate representative. So, Mr. Chairman and Council, that is my presentation, and any questions you might have, I'm happy to try and answer.
We do. Councillor Shule.
I don't really have a question, but I was just going to make a motion. Option one, can I do the option one motion that Reeve Belkey be appointed to council representative to Calgary Metropolitan Regional Board until October 2018 organizational meeting, and motion two, that Deputy Reeve Gautreau be appointed as an alternate representative to Calgary Regional Board until October 2018.
Thank you. We have some discussion. Councillor Hansen.
I thought the Sutino was going to be a member on the board. I didn't see it. Am I mistaken?
Through the chair to Councillor Hansen, yes, they are not a member of the board. The province really doesn't have the jurisdictional power to bring them into the board. The regulation states that the board is to try and engage other jurisdictions and smaller municipalities in some form who are not members of the board. So, for example, Crossfield, you know, how will they be engaged? They're within the county. The county is going to be subject to the board. Does that affect any of our agreements with Crossfield, for example? That's unknown. But coming back to your question, no, they're not officially engaged. I think the board would be encouraged to meet with them.
Right. So I was mistaken. Excellent. Just curious, the REF obviously has a different voting structure than the main board matters. Is there anything else that might have a different voting structure that we could see at this time?
Through the board, I wouldn't suggest that it actually has a different voting structure. I'm going to presume that Calgary will want to keep the voting structure that's been proposed as the overall voting structure. Part of the process in voting, for example, on the Capital Regional Board, plans that were consistent actually went to a committee, a telephone poll of CAOs, and if no one objected, it didn't actually even go to the board. So some of that process might be part of the voting structure. I have some suggestions on how we might vote that I'd rather discuss with council offline if I could.
Yeah. Okay. And are we getting any traction at all on an appeal process for decisions off this board?
Through the chair, I'll make some comments, and the Reeve might want to also make some comments. So The Act says that the board must have a dispute resolution or appeal mechanism for any decision of the board. And then the regulation states that subject to that, all decisions of the board on statutory plans are final and not subject to appeal. So from my perspective, there's a little bit of a contradiction in here. The county has always taken the position in this matter that there should be an appeal mechanism and it should reside outside of the board. So that maybe, you know, you would try and work it through mediation, whatever. But, you know, a final decision appeal mechanism should reside outside of the board and be looking at plan consistency. So, for example, recently in Edmonton, there was a decision made by the board to reject a plan by the municipality of Beaumont. And they had submitted a plan which I think most people agreed was consistent with the growth plan in the region, but Edmonton vetoed that particular plan. And so I think our view on it is there should be an independent third party that should be able to rule on consistency of the board. Now, that's something we're going to advocate for within the regulation, but I'm not sure where everybody else stands on it.
Thank you.
And I really don't have anything to add to that. That's pretty accurate. Any further questions? Seeing none, I'll call the question. All in favor? That is carried. Thank you for your report. We'll go to D3.
Good morning, Council. I don't see Mr. Woods, but I will attempt to present this report. So D3 is a tax penalty cancellation that we have had. We've adjudicated through administration. The owners of the property were not happy with the outcome of that adjudication, and they've since asked for an audience before Council to determine whether or not Council sees it differently than what we have done. Essentially, this dispute or this cancellation request comes from a drainage issue. The owner of the property had declared that they're no longer going to pay the property taxes until that dispute has been alleviated or fixed. They have, again, started paying their property taxes. Unfortunately, they did incur penalties over a period of time. The penalty amount is in front of you there. It's approximately $1,400. We've also included the policy that administration would use as our lens to measure whether or not there's an ability of us as administration to cancel these penalties. There is not, in our opinion, and so hence it's before Council. I'm available for any questions, should you have any.
Is there any questions? Or a motion, Deputy Reeve Cottrell?
Well, you know, there's times when people get desperate, and you know, they want to count. They just want the county to listen to them. You know, drainage issues, floodings. You know, I look at that as people's time as crisis as well. I personally think that in some of the areas in mine, that you know, the municipalities let them down. But saying that, I got to go with option one, and to refuse the tax penalty cancellation. It's just, you know, the MGA and the policy just says that, you know, we can't do that. I mean, if you don't pay your taxes, you don't pay your taxes. So, you know, regretfully, I have to go with option one. But, you know, I do think that the county should maybe start, and I'm not saying we don't, but maybe listen a little bit closer to some of our residents in time of crisis. That's my motion.
Any discussion? Seeing none, call the question. All in favor? And Councillor Henn, did you vote? Oh, well, then we need a recorded vote. Councillor Kissel, please.
In favor. I agree with the Deputy Reeve, and I'm in favor.
Opposed.
In favor.
In favor.
In favor.
In favor.
In favor.
In favor.
And that is carried. Thank you. D4.
Good morning, Council. D4 is in respect of the 2016 property tax refund request from roll 04209003. Rocky View County has received a request from the owner of roll 04209003 for a refund of property taxes related to a communications tower located on their property. The communications tower was constructed between 2013 and 2015, but it was not assessed as linear property by Municipal Affairs until 2017. The county added the tower to the assessment roll in 2016, and the resulting taxes were the responsibility of the property owner. As set out in the lease agreement between the landowner and the owner of the communications tower, the landowner has the ability to collect the taxes related to the tower from the owner of the tower. Administration is recommending refusal in accordance with option one that the property tax refund request for roll 04209003 be refused. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Councillor Shule.
On this one here, I'm going to give an explanation, but I am going to go with option two that it's being refunded. The reason B is, first of all, it was out of their control that it wasn't assessed properly with linear, whatever they call themselves. Secondly, he did go talk to the seller, cellular providers or whatever. I don't know if I can mention who the cell tower belongs to, but they refused to pay the portion. I think this is more that these people got caught up into some out of their control. I don't believe it's they can't force the linear guys to take over the taxation on that on the tower. It's out of their hands. So I did talk to the family quite a bit, and they weren't even aware that they could appeal this last time too. So I hope I get the support from council to refund them the money.
So you're making a motion then for...
Yes, option, there's not a second option, but it would be option to cancel the... Just hang on, I got the wrong one here. I hit the wrong button, sorry. That the property refund request would be approved.
Okay. Mr. Robinson.
So thank you, Mr. Chair. All I would add or ask of council, if that is the road you want to go down, and I don't know if that has support or not, but I would just caution, if you look at the report under the budget implications, it does set out what is the municipalities and what has been flow through basically to the province. So any of the education or the seniors taxes, we do not have anymore. We simply pay those out. We collect them on behalf of the school and the Seniors Foundation. We pay them out. The municipal property tax we do have control over, and that if council is going down this path, again, it's ultimately your decision how much you want to give back, but I would ask that you consider the municipal portion only and not the school and seniors foundation portion.
Can I amend my motion?
In a minute. Deputy Reeve Control.
Thank you. A couple of questions I have, and I don't know, just some of my notes. I read the report, but it looks like the landowner can't collect the taxes from the cell phone company. You know, I mean, it says in your report that they can, but I think it's more of a thing that, you know, they're not going to get it. Second thing is I have is that who's responsible for reporting linear property to the MGA or to Municipal Affairs for linear property?
Through the chair to Deputy Reeve Goudreau. That's the responsibility of the tower, the owner of the tower.
So does the municipality pick it up on a development permit? Like, do they have to come in for a development permit when they build cell towers?
Through the chair to Deputy Goudreau, yes.
So on the DP then, we should have been able to catch that this tower was being built, and 2 years shouldn't have gone by then to catch it for linear property then, correct?
So I may wade in here. We in fact did catch it, and that's why our assessors went out and valued the property and added it to the tax roll. Unfortunately, we don't have a great deal of control over the linear assessment process with municipal affairs. We can certainly report it to them and say, hey, listen, guys, you might have missed this, but we don't have a great deal more control than that.
So, again, just my understanding that we've taxed the role owner for that tower then, so we is it back tax or is it just that 1 year? Where do we go with this?
Through the chair, that's correct. It's that 1 year that we did collect it, and it went to the linear role on municipal affairs in 2017.
So then if we refund this taxes, the county's out everything because we didn't get it from linear, we didn't get it from the property owner, so we basically are out the amount of monies.
Through the chair, that's correct.
Thank you.
Councillor Hanson.
Still a little bit confused. So there was no double taxation at any point then. It was just this 2016 is in contention because the big cell phone company refuses to pay our poor little landowner.
Through the chair, that's correct.
Thank you.
Councillor McKeiler.
Thank you. Just for my education, can you tell me what linear property is defined as?
So I look back to our assessor. Through the chair, essentially linear property is all those types of things like telecommunications towers, electrical generation, those types of things that are assessed through the province. Pipelines, for instance, those are considered linear property. All of those things that they assess that is not considered building and structure as defined by the Act.
Can I assume that the landowner was compensated for putting this cellular tower on his or her property?
Through the chair to Councillor McCullough. I can't guarantee that they were, but there is a lease agreement in place.
Thank you.
Councillor Shule.
If I can amend my motion after hearing what Mr. Robinson said, that we refund the municipal tax portion only, and obviously not the other two that have been gone out. So I'll make the motion that we refund $2,077.65. That'll be my motion.
Okay, we have Councillor Kissel.
Through the Reeve, through the DP process, do we not address these issues under the conditions? Because knowing that this is a linear property, knowing that there will be tax paid on something that the property owner actually doesn't own, they're leasing the land, do we not have something that covers that in that DP?
Through the chair, the conditions of development permit simply deal with the use of the land. They don't deal with any of the taxation or related matters.
So when that DP was put out, the landowner would not have known. He would have had a contract that said that the cell tower people would pay, but the DP would not actually show that who was paying those taxes.
Through the chair, that's correct.
And so we have zero obligation when a DP is put on someone else. So this is a cell tower that he doesn't own, and it's put on his land. Do we have any obligation to let him know there will be taxes on that tower? Because he does have a contract, right? So I'm just trying to figure out where the disconnect between the two would come, because that's what we have here.
Through the chair, once again, the development permit process relates to use of land. Any of those other matters are a matter for the landowner to educate themselves on, I would assume.
Thank you.
I'm Councillor Comeche.
I just want to sort of get this clear in my head. The landowner is coming to, or is asking Rocky View to pay for something that he should be settling with the communications tower owner.
Through the chair, that is my understanding, yes.
Okay, but we as the resident, we shouldn't be paying for an agreement that's between two other parties.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Councillor Shule.
I just so everybody would understand that, First of all, these are very elderly people. Secondly, they did try to communicate with the tower provider or whoever is in there, and they were more or less told where to go. So so I do sympathize with these people. It's something that it's not really, it's been out of their control. It's not really their fault. It's not their fault that Municipal Affairs did not pick it up. And because they were elderly, they really did not understand the process that they could have appealed it. So I guess I'll leave it with that. So I hope you guys support me on this one. Thank you.
Councillor Wright.
Through the Deputy Reeve, is this a common occurrence? Do we see a lot of this, or is this pretty much a one-off?
Through the chair to Councillor Wright, this is a one-off.
I see no further. Oops, Deputy Reeve, control.
So, you know, I kind of have troubles with this one. Now that I've vacated that chair, I can kind of speak a little bit here. I have trouble with this one, but, you know, I'm going to have to support Councillor Shule on this one, you know, even just because I find that we dropped the ball a little bit, Municipal Affairs dropped the ball some, and these people weren't prepared to take the taxes and then try to go back to the cell tower. You know, sometime later, the cell tower just said no. So, you know, I'm going to have to agree with that, but I would like, you know, Councillor Shule maybe to read out his entire motion. I know it's on the board. Just with the other monies that are there, but I will be supporting his motion.
Actually, he did read that out. But,
I don't think he had the monies out.
Yeah.
Okay,
he
sorry.
Did have the money amount. Actually, I'm not going to support that. I think the tower was there. Probably rent was paid on it. And I don't see a ball being dropped. I just see it was a lax because of Municipal Affairs doing most of the linear. There was a time lapse, but in fact, our administration caught it. So, anyway, Councillor McCarter.
I'll have to agree, Reeve. I think that this is an issue between the landowner and the cellular company. I think it's probably a contract issue, and I think that is their recourse. So, I'm unfortunately, Councillor Shule, I won't be able to support that motion.
Okay. Would you like to close, Councillor Shule?
Yes, I would. I just want to just mention again, this can happen pretty well to anybody that gets a tower, and if he's not, they're not aware that Municipal Affairs is supposed to pick up on that. I can see that happening quite often. This is not a very common item. I do believe, again, I do want to really mention that these farmers have lived on the land for all their lifetime, is probably in the 40, 50 years. I don't know exactly how long. They've always paid their taxes on time. There's and again, because they are quite elderly, I would like to give them at least some leeway here. So I hope you will support the motion of refunding the $2,077.65. Thank you.
Thank you. We will call the question. All in favor? And I'm sorry, it's a recorded vote. Councillor Comanche.
Opposed.
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 In favor.
In favor.
In favor.
Opposed. Opposed.
And that is defeated. You need a follow-up motion then to... No, I guess not. It just happens. Right? 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 Right. Okay. We'll take a 10-minute break, and we'll come back for public hearing. We'll call the meeting back to order, and we've had a request to start with C2, so and administration has no problem with that. So we will start with C2. Go to Division 5 Councillor for the public hearing.
Wish to open public hearing for C2.
All in favor? And the hearing is opened. If we could get the report.
Good morning, Reeve and members of Council. Andrea Bryden speaking on behalf of Planning Services.
The subject property is located at the northeast junction of Highway 560 and Range Road 281. The proposal is to redesignate the subject property from Ranch and Farm 2 District to Business Highway Frontage District to accommodate an unknown future business development. The land is approximately 72 acres in size, and the minimum lot size for the Business Highway Frontage District is 2.5 acres, which would suggest that redesignating the parcel could allow for the subdivision of 20 or more lots, creating a sizable business development. The county plan identifies appropriate locations for business development to occur to accommodate the growth of the county's business sector. It is intended that business development be directed to identified business areas. This enables businesses to complement the adjacent business development, maximize the use of existing infrastructure, minimize land use conflicts, and minimize the amount of traffic being drawn into the rural areas. Further, business areas shall have an adopted area structure plan in place prior to development. The eastern boundary of the Janet Area Structure Plan, which is an identified regional business center, is approximately 1 mile west of the subject property. Policy 14.19 of the county plan states that applications to redesignate land for business uses adjacent to or in the vicinity of the boundaries of an identified business area shall not be supported. Policy 14.21 requires applicants to redesignate land for business uses outside of an area structure plan to provide a rationale as to that justifies the location. The county has not received any rationale to justify the location. Further, policy 14.22 or 22 requires proposals for business development outside of a business area, to be limited in size, scale, intensity, and scope, have direct and safe access to a paved county road or provincial highway, provide a traffic impact and intersection assessment, and minimize adverse impacts on existing residential, business, or agricultural uses. The applicant has not provided a transportation impact assessment or any information pertaining to the proposed uses. Administration and Alberta Transportation are unable to determine if the proposed development would have impacts on the surrounding road network. Without this supporting information, Alberta Transportation has concerns with the proposal. The proposed redesignation is not compatible with surrounding agricultural land uses, could impact the future success of the nearby Janet Area Structure Plan, and deferring any transportation requirements to later development approvals opens up the opportunity for those requirements to be appealed. For these reasons, administration recommends refusal in accordance with option 2. And I've prepared a video for council. So facing north, there's Range Road 281 in view, and the subject lands on the eastern side. Panning east, the existing dwelling comes into view. So now we're facing east, which would be the subject property. And then panning south, you'll start to see Highway 560 and the intersection of Highway 560 and Range Road 281 is right here. So facing directly south now. And panning to the west, you'll start to see the agricultural lands come into, or adjacent agricultural lands come into view. So facing directly west now. And right in front of us is Range Road 281. And then panning back north, more agricultural land in view, and Range Road 281. That concludes my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. Excuse me. We'll now call on the applicant to come forward, and you have 20 minutes to tell us about your project. You'd state your name for the record, please.
Paul Schneider.
Thank you.
I have a handout for everyone. Thank you. The handout that I have going around is from Rocky View 2060. All I did was copy the first three pages of the plan that they have. This is off Rocky View's website, and it's just page one. And then there's page two. It just was kind of going over the history, and page three. That's just an index. I've numbered the pages up in the top right-hand corner with felt pen number one through to four. In the bottom left-hand corner is the page number of the growth management strategy. What I'd like to point out is on the down part, two-thirds it's underlined, it says, "Inaugural development of non-contiguous design will be supported by the development along these minor business corridors. The growth management strategy recognizes the following minor business areas." Highway 560, which is Glenmore Trail, from Janet to Langdon. So they're already recommending that there can be commercial spotted development along Glenmore Trail. And at this time, we wanted to get the rezoning done, as it took almost a year to get the rezoning, so that then we can get at the development permit stage and or subdivision, we'll need to get the transportation study done, stormwater, all that sort of stuff. I mean, it's no sense spending money if we can't get the zoning done. And with the zoning, we can't do anything. We have to go back to the county, get a development permit or a subdivision. So that stage, they'll know what use it's going to be, and then they can require the transportation study based on that particular use. You know, different businesses have different traffic flows. So that's the part there. This is an area that probably will develop commercially along this road, whereas the Janet is more of a industrial commercial base rather than this is highway commercial. I think it would be a different type of thing. You might have like a gas station or a truck stop or something like that, or a number of other things allowing in the zoning. If this is approved eventually, it'll increase the property, you know, commercial property tax for Rocky View. So this is a, you know, an asset for it. It would require, you know, transportation study and all the other studies done at the future time once we know what it's going to be. You know, I think that's all I have for now. Any questions?
Actually, yes. Councillor Shule.
I actually got a couple questions. One, how much of that land, what is that land being used for, and is it farmable?
Yeah, it's a hay field.
It is a hay field. I was looking at the land that also had a W, like the wetlands. Is there a lot of wetlands on that land?
No, there's one right in the middle, a small one, and that would be worked around with whatever development was going to be. That would probably remain because the land slopes into the center and the back there. When I've farmed it, whatever, you can see it there at the one spot. Rarely have I been able to drive a tractor through there during hay season.
My last question for now, when the Janet Area Structure Plan was being developed, were you being part of that at all?
No, I wasn't.
Okay, thank you.
Can I get you to just hit the button there and turn that mic on?
Sorry.
Yeah, thank you.
There was one other thing. What I did was take the map on page two and just do the one by on the east side that shows Janet and Langdon and that. It shows that the red mark is designed, or the hashed area is designed for minor business corridor, nodal development. So it showed there on the map. That's the only thing I did different was just take a photocopy and add the name of the roads on it so it was clearer. It was kind of small. It had the whole county on it. and that there is an existing house on the property. I don't know what it said. It showed a picture of it, but that's on the property. And right at that one, video, it was right at the beginning there in the north part. Just to clarify, that's not neighboring property.
Deputy Reeve, control.
Thank you, through the Reeve. Mr. Schneider, and this could be for a minute as well, but first question I'm going to direct to you is, can you tell me what other industry is close in around your area? Is there lots? Is there heavy? Is it medium?
At present, there's none other than the area, Gannon Area Structure Plan. There's no commercial. I think you have to get down a lot further west on Highway 2 or go a lot further east, not Highway 2, Glenmore. There's none of that immediate area. I guess it's somebody's got to start, I guess.
Okay. And this could be for the administration. I know that there's talk about Secondary Highway 560 with a new highway configuration. Do we know what that configuration looks like, and is it going to impact these properties?
Through Mr. Chair, and I think, Deputy, you're speaking for configuration as the twinning. And so Highway 560 has been slated to be twinned, no set timeline from Alberta Transportation. As part of the twinning, I would say there's going to be impact to both landowners on either side of Highway 560 in terms of right-of-way expansion and highway expansion.
So we have no drawing as of yet then how that's going to look like?
We do have, from Alberta Transportation, their twinning plan for Highway 566. We can bring that to Council's attention and show it on the overhead if Council wishes to see that.
I would like to see it, and I'm trying to go off memory, and that's why I'm asking for it. For some reason, I think it's impacting going right over this property or something. But I'm kind of speaking out of turn until I see it. But
sure. Through you, Mr. Chair, we'll make sure we get that information about where the 20 is going.
Thank you. Councillor Shule, sorry.
This is a question is probably more to staff. You know, how much pressure is there on Glenmore Trail, or is there any plans on looking at what businesses can fit, or like an area structure, mini area structure plan, or something along Glenmore Trail? Is it becoming a pressure area?
Through you, Mr. Chair, if I can speak to the traffic related side of things. Glenmore Trail, and I would say from a peak hour perspective, does see some pressures, only because of the commuting traffic coming from Langdon and from the city of Chestermere. I would say that's exactly why Alberta Transportation started to look at when is it appropriate to twin Glenmore Trail and what are the locations for interchanges for Glenmore Trail. As part of their plan, and we'll definitely show that when we have that information, there are interchanges planned at Range Road 284 and Highway 791, and so that'll all fit the bill on how they're going to deal with this section of road in the future.
Councillor Kissel.
Through the Reeve. If you receive the redesignation, what is your vision for this land?
Yeah, I think one of the things to be is be a truck, you know, gas station center. I've had people inquiring about it, but until we get the zoning, everything takes a long time. One of the other things I wanted to add regarding the transportation, when we rezoned back, or not rezoned, subdivided back in 2007, into the north piece and the south piece, Alberta Transportation took some land off the front for widening. You know, they already took some land off. And I think, obviously, at the transportation stage, they would be determined if they needed more land or not. It would be up to, before we'd get approval from them for any development permits.
Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Shule.
Sorry, I forgot to ask that question before, but I know you. The question was asked, is there any other businesses around there? How far is that power plant from you?
I believe the power plant's at Range Road 284, and this is 281.
So it's about
3 miles or 2.5 miles.
Thank you. I see no further questions. Thank you very much. We'll now call on those in favor If you'd like to come forward and speak in favor, you have 5 minutes, 10 if you're representing a group. First, I have Sheila Buckley.
I agree with what he said, so that was all. I can't add anything further.
Okay, so. Thank you very much. There's a Mr. Hansen, Harris Hansen.
Hello, I was invited down here and didn't really...
You maybe have to speak right up.
Sorry. Thanks for listening to me. I was invited here last minute because I'm involved with Sheila in the hay farm there. It seems to me this is a good intersection to include in your plans for some future commercial development, given that there's going to be some improved roads on both sides of the property. Seems to me like a good place for a future truck stop. It's just that until you actually have permission, if you have rezoning, then you can't really approach people and ask them if they want to be there. Once you know who's going to be there or who wants to be there, then seems to me the time to do a traffic study and engineering for whatever kind of intersection you might be planning in the future. And there's lots of land there to set aside for whatever the Rocky View needs are. I think Paul covered the bases, and I really don't have a lot more to say. Thank you.
Thank you. I see no questions. I'll ask once again, anyone in favor would like to come forward and speak? Seeing no one, we'll ask for those in Councillor Shule.
Before I get opposition, I still never heard from planning whether there's any plans on Glanmore Trail for any kind of an area structure plan or anything in that area.
Through the reeve to Councillor Shule. As was mentioned, you can see on the map here, we have the Janet Area Structure Plan, which is identified in the county plan as a strategic regional business area. There is still a significant amount of land within the Janet Area Structure Plan for development, and there is policies in that plan for area of commercial, highway commercial, along the 560 corridor there on the south part. And then the northern parts of that area are more industrial type lands. So we do have a mix of commercial and industrial allowed for in there, and plenty of space in there for continued development at this time. So there's been no plans to expand that currently. I just will address briefly some of the history from the Rocky View 2060 into the county plan. So that was a strategic document done by council back in 2009, and it was passed by resolution, and it was always intended to feed into the new county plan, which is the municipal development plan, which is statutory. So those are council's policies that have power under the act. So the directions and recommendations from Rocky View 2060 were encapsulated into the county plan and into more defined areas based on that robust public process. I hope that answers the question.
So in definition, the Rocky View 2060 is kind of, it's an old document that some was incorporated, some wasn't, but the county plan is the current planning document.
That is correct, Mr. Reeve. It has no status. The county plan is the statutory plan for council's policies.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Shule.
I guess that's my next question is, in Rocky View 2060, it's not it's an older plan, but it's not that old. Why was Glanmore Trail excluded out of that study or out of the county plan? Why did they not recognize that that's a potential growth area, no different than number 22X or anything else?
Through the chair to Councillor Shule, the Rocky View 2060, when it identified some of those areas, it was quite conceptual, and it was clear that it would be not a ribbon of development along the highway, but nodal and key locations, and then further done through comprehensive work through area structure plans. So the key area in that was focused in the Janet area and in Langdon. And at this point in time, given that there's still lots of space in the Janet area, there isn't the need to expand it at this point in time.
Thank you. We will now call on those in opposition. Anyone in opposition that would like to come forward, you have 5 minutes as a single, 10 as a group. And I'll ask one more time, anyone in opposition would like to come forward? Seeing none, we have no need then for rebuttal. There is no one on the list. So, councillor's wish. Councillor Gautreau.
Move to close.
Oh, wait a second.
Sorry.
I want to slow things down. Is there any questions?
Mr. I think before I close, the Alberta Transportation that I asked for. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And directly to the question from the Deputy Reeve, and I apologize for the size, but the plan that is within the Alberta Transportation Twinning Plan for Glenmore Trail, what we've tried to do is the star is roughly where the land is that we are considering today. And you can see the twinning plan there, which is the interchange of 791 and 560, which is to the east. And the dotted lines that kind of traverse through that land is what Alberta Transportation is considered in terms of a service road dedication. So you can see that there are impacts to this land in the future if Alberta Transportation moves forward with this plan.
So that's kind of what my memory was recalling was some of this, the impact of lands, and I didn't know if it was highway or if it was service road, so it clearly is a service road access on both sides of Glenmore Trail then.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Councillor Shule.
How many acres of land would that entail from that property? It almost looks like it's going to take half of that property.
Mr. Chair, I do not have that information right now, and if we wanted those detailed calculations, we would have to go do some measuring.
Okay.
This would be considered conceptual. Is that true or not?
Well, this is what is Alberta Transportation. This is what Alberta Transportation would be considered as the plan for growth for Highway 560. Now, if they move forward, things have changed in terms of what they've knew as land development when they developed this plan. They would have to actually make some modifications to it.
Thank you. Councillor McKeiler.
Thank you. Through the Reeve, there's no timeline on this plan or, is it on the immediate horizon? Do we know?
Through you, Mr. Chair, from a construction perspective, I would say we consistently hear from Alberta Transportation that it is not inside their three-year window, and so it is a plan of the future.
Thank you. Deputy Reeve Gautreau.
So just a follow-up question then. If this was approved today, they would have to go to Alberta Transportation for anything else just because of where it sits on the highway. And would Alberta Transportation then give them these guidance of where things could go or not go?
Through you, Mr. Chair, and I think that's one of the comments you're seeing from an administration and from Alberta Transportation is it's hard for us to make any determination without the proper TIA so that we can understand impacts. And so if this was to be approved by council through the redesignation the applicant was to move forward into the subdivision stage, that would set the pace for how much land access management, where everything is going to work out in accordance with this plan, and our own plans in terms of how we're going to generate access and transportation corridors.
Okay, thank you.
Councillor Shule.
Sorry, I got one more question for staff. By some chance, and I just want to make sure we go through the right process, if it got approved and say it only got first and second reading and then requested the applicant to get these studies done, would that create another public hearing because we're getting new information?
Through the chair to Councillor Shule, I believe if that was the case, I would recommend just first reading, because I do believe if it just has first reading and not second, and there was new information, you wanted to reopen the hearing, you would still have that opportunity. But it's my understanding that if you gave it second reading, then we wouldn't have that opportunity.
Thank you again. Okay, one more time. Any more questions before I ask for the councillor's wish? Seeing none, Deputy Reeve Gautreau.
So I'd like to move to close, please.
Motion to close the hearing. All in favor? And that is carried.
I am going to actually move option one, that the bylaw C-77-46-2017 be given first reading. And the reason why I'm going to be supporting that is that there is a lot of industry moving out through there, heavy industry and as well as commercial industry, and I just think it fits the region. I know it's not in the area structure plan, and some of the county plan designates that it shouldn't be there, but just the way that this whole area is growing, I'm going to actually support that, at least give it to first reading, and then we'll see where it goes from there. Thank you.
Councillor Wright.
Through the Reeve, I will not be supporting that. I think administration got it right. I think Alberta Transportation has concerns that need to be addressed. I think we already have areas of growth that are identified, and if we need to build those out first. And if we are going to look outside of those areas, then we need to have some buy-in. And currently they have not addressed any of the issues that administration has put forth because there is no plan. And I understand, too, what the applicant is saying in that you want to be able to rezone the lands first, but unfortunately that's not how it works, at least not in my opinion, and so I will not be supporting that motion.
Thank you. Councillor Shule.
I will be supporting it up until the point of first reading. I do believe that area has a lot of growth pressure right along Glenmore Trail. I wasn't on council before, so I don't know why it was excluded, and I really strongly believe that Glenmore Trail, right from Langdon to Calgary, is under pressure. There's a for growth. I do understand the applicant's hesitance of get spending $50,000 on a study that on all these studies that will go out for waste, unless you know. And that's the worst thing is we're asking people to do these major studies without having any indication that this could be even looked at as a growth area. So I will support up to first reading. Then if it does go there, then I would expect that the applicant would go get the proper studies required for this year. But I will definitely support Councillor Gautreau on this one. Deputy Reeve.
I see. Oh, Councillor Hansen.
I will not be supporting this motion either. People have invested in Janet. They've bought property in Janet on the basis that that is the place where growth is supposed to happen. And I think we do a big disservice to our resident and our resident businesses when we don't follow our own development frameworks.
Thank you. I'm sorry, but I can't support it either. I think we do have delineated growth areas, and we have one just half a mile to the west of this, with, as we heard from administration, plenty of room for commercial, and the policies that we've adopted as a council are to try to grow the areas that we've delineated, and when build-out comes, there will be room for expansion, and that, I guess the word would be premature. So, Councillor, or Deputy Reeve, Gautreau to close.
Thank you, Mr. Reeve. So, you know, I'm going to ask support for at least first reading to go there, and then the applicant can go, to do his studies. You know, this Rocky View 2060, even though it may not be a statutory document, it's a document that still needs to be recognized. I mean, it was designed by previous councils and by administration showing areas. You know, did we get the county plan right? Well, I can kind of disagree on some of that stuff as well. But, you know, this definitely shows that it's a growth area. I do believe it fits in the area. We have power plants. We have high industrial there. This property is about 1 mile or so or 2 miles away from the Janet area structure plan. I think it should be looked at. So I'm going to ask support for at least up to first reading. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll call the question. All in favor? And we have a recorded vote, so we'll start with Councillor Kissel.
In favor.
Opposed.
Opposed.
In favor.
In favor.
Opposed.
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 And your application has been refused. We'll go. Anybody need a break? Nope. Okay, we'll go to C1, which is Division 4.
Make a motion to open a hearing.
Move to open. All in favor? That is carried.
Good morning, Reeve and members of council. Jessica Anderson, representing Planning Services. Item C1 is located in Division 4, approximately 1/4 mile north of Township Road 230 and on the west side of Range Road 284, 0.75 miles east of the City of Calgary. The purpose of this application is to redesignate the subject lands from Agricultural Holdings District to Residential 2 District to facilitate the creation of 5 3.95-acre parcels with an internal access road. The subject land is located in an area of the county that is primarily country residential with large agricultural parcels to the east. The parcel contains an existing dwelling and accessory buildings and is serviced by a well and private sewage system. The existing dwelling is accessed from Range Road 284 by a gravel approach that is in good condition. The applicant has not provided the required technical reports to demonstrate the feasibility for servicing of water and wastewater or stormwater management as per the county plan. The subject land is not located within the policy area of an area structure plan, and as such, the application has been assessed in accordance with the county plan, specifically the fragmented country residential policies. The lands are also located within the Rocky View County City of Calgary Intermunicipal Development Plan area and are identified on Map 4 of the IDP as a future residential growth corridor for the City of Calgary. The City has provided a letter in opposition to the application, which has been included in Appendix A. The county plan supports the redesignation and subdivision of fragmented quarter sections where the criteria set out in Section 10.11 are adequately addressed. The subject lands meet the definition of a fragmented quarter section. However, no evidence or rationale has been provided to meet the criteria of a fragmented quarter section policies. Generally, a multi-lot residential development would be accomplished through preparation of a conceptual scheme, which would address development at the quarter section level and include a policy framework to guide future subdivision and development. For existing fragmented quarters, the lot and road plan requirement is intended to eliminate the practical difficulty of multiple parcel ownership and the burden of plan preparation falling on a single owner of a limited amount of land, while still addressing relevant planning issues such as servicing, stormwater, and access. A lot and road plan does require consultation with owners within the plan area and would be retained by the county to guide future subdivision approvals. The redesignation to Residential 2 District cannot be recommended for approval for the following reasons. The proposal does not meet the criteria of the fragmented residential policies in Section 10 of the county plan. The applicant has not provided a lot and road plan consistent with the county plan, which would provide relevant details on such matters as water supply and sewage treatment, stormwater management, and a range of other planning matters as detailed in the staff report. The proposal is inconsistent with the Rocky View County City of Calgary Intermunicipal Development Plan. The applicant has not provided the supporting technical materials to demonstrate the feasibility of servicing and stormwater management as per the county plan and county servicing standards. And the internal road proposed does not meet the requirements of the county servicing standards. Therefore, administration recommends refusal in accordance with option 2. I have prepared a video for council's consideration as well. So the video begins looking north on Range Road 284. The subject lands are to the west. As we pan eastward, the adjacent agricultural lands come into view. And facing eastward here. As we pan southward towards Range Road 284, and facing south on Range Road 284. As we start to pan westward again, the subject lands will start to come into view. These are the subject lines here facing westward. And as we start to pan northward again, the subject lands are in view, the existing home and associated accessory buildings. The driveway is just on the other side of those trees, and the approach is located here, coming off of Range Road 284. And that concludes my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. Excuse me again. We'll now call on the applicant to come forward. You have 20 minutes to tell us about your proposal. State your name for the record, please.
Paul Schneider. I'd just like to say in the four quarter sections immediately adjoining all this property, there is only two, this parcel and the parcel to the north that are zoned agricultural holdings. All the rest are R2, primarily R2 or R1. And you can see just from that map, even though those big parcels are still all zoned R2, I think it's a matter of infilling. On that quarter section here, I believe there's over 20 four-acre parcels already on that. And the reason, you know, at the subdivision stage, we'll be providing engineering, stormwater, you know, proof of water at that stage. It's kind of premature at the zoning stage because you can't subdivide unless you get water or stormwater. And also on the topographical map, they talked about in their plan about some low areas. There's no low areas at all on there. The low areas are to the east and south. In fact, that's all hayland except where the house is, and it's been that for a number over 20 years. I live up the road. And it's been hay for over 20 years. So I think there's it needs the rezoning and to go ahead with the subdivision. And at that stage, all the engineering work will have to be provided in order to get it subdivided. And as far as through roads, there's a lot of cul-de-sacs or panhandles in this area. There's on this quarter, you can see Shortridge Place to the north, Prairie View to the northwest, some panhandles there. The only access would be to the property to the north, and at the subdivision stage, the county has been providing a road right away, they have another designated for future road through that, and they have been doing that on other subdivisions I have done, and the only place would be to the north to that. That part there, it's 20 acres. I talked to them about this, and they had no problems at all with us rezoning it, because everybody else is, you can see all R2 right around in this quarter. Most of that land was zoned R2 back in the 70s, I understand. And they're originally 20s, and then they gradually, built down to smaller pieces as time went on. Anyways, that's all I have for your, and I hope wish for your support. Thank you.
Thank you. I have a question. Councillor Shule.
Quick question to the applicant. If council's wish was to give you first reading, would you be, and then... waited until you got the rest of the studies done, would you be comfortable doing the studies once you at least when you had first reading?
I think the main study that it would need is for water, and my well gets 25 gallons in a minute. All the wells around there, they have lots of water, but it stinks. It has H2S smell in it. So I mean, and the other that would be the primary study, and then the other one would be the stormwater, and it depends on how your lot layout, and that would be required at the subdivision stage. I don't think, and if you don't get water, you don't get the approval of the subdivision.
My other question is, and this is going to be to yourself and then probably to staff, do you understand what the road and lot plan means?
I thought I had turned it off, but I hadn't. Okay, so can you repeat that question?
Not a problem. Do you understand what a lot and road plan means? you understand that, or if not, you do? Okay. I'm gonna defer this out to the staff. Can you explain what the lot and road plan means and how we can ask an applicant to do it on lands that aren't that have no ownership on? Can somebody explain that one to me, please?
Through the Reeve to Councillor Shule, a lot and road plan is a non-statutory plan that accompanies a land use application. It is used to comprehensively address a limited set of specific planning issues. The intent of this is to address the practical difficulty of preparation of a concept plan, which would typically be at the quarter section level, to kind of alleviate that burden of a single landowner needing to address development at the quarter section level. So at a minimum, typically we would see a lot and road plan address the subject lands and then provide some understanding of how that may affect development on adjacent lands. It would include matters such as servicing, stormwater, access and transportation, and then considerations for the implications for adjacent land uses. So the lot and road plan is intended to be submitted with a redesignation application for a fragmented quarter section. The subject lands are certainly within a fragmented quarter section, and the intent of the lot and road plan is to address the technical matters associated with redesignation and development on a fragmented piece of this particular quarter.
What triggers you guys to ask for a lot and road plan? What triggers it? Is it fragmented quarters, or is that what triggers it?
That's correct. So the subject lands are identified in the county plan. They meet the definition of a fragmented quarter section. So we have assessed the application in accordance with those policies, the policies in Section 10. There are a range of other applications an applicant could submit. However, for this particular application, it was assessed in accordance with the fragmented. And so a lot and road plan is a critical piece of that assessment.
At what time do you normally ask for it, during subdivision or redesignation? Because I've seen it coming in at both, so just so where I'm a little confused. Can this be asked at subdivision time?
Through the chair, so the policy does require that a lot and road plan be submitted at the redesignation stage.
Go ahead, sir.
Yes, I'd like to point out on this the land use map up on in the area of the northeast corner where it's R2. It's just a sort of jogs out there. I had an application. Well, it got approved for a two-lot subdivision in there, and what they did. Is we had to register as part of the subdivision stage a road allowance, both to the west, to the east, and to the north. And the people to the north had to do the same thing. It's not the proper, the land is just there. It's still the owner of the lot, but it's, I'm going to say it's frozen because it's done on a plan of survey, of a proposed, it's done at the survey stage. So we didn't ask to do it. They insisted that, well, they put it on the plan in order to get approved. When they approved it, they put the future roads through. And I think on going back to our parcel here at the 20 acres, I think the only logical spot would be to bring a road halfway through, you know, future road allowance to the north, so that when they developed that piece of fifth and when they ever developed, there would be an L shape come off, be going north, and then they would have to bring the other part, go north a bit more, and out again. So it would be not a cul-de-sac, but I don't know what you'd call it, horseshoe-shaped type of road. But that was done at any of the ones that have always been at the subdivision stage, because until you register the plan and find out where your wells are, you may have a different configuration.
Thank you. I have a question. And on this map, can you give us a rough idea of where the Calgary Growth Corridor that was negotiated through the annexation, the last annexation, where does that start to the north? And I know Have you got that map without that X in it?
To the chair, the subject lands are located within section 5 right here. So the green area that you see here is identified as a Calgary growth corridor.
So all those subdivided lands around this particular are in that Calgary growth corridor?
To the chair, that is correct.
Okay. Thank you. Any further questions for the applicant? Seeing none, we will now ask for those in favor to come forward. Anyone in favor can come forward and speak, and you have 5 minutes or 10 as a group. And we have Sheila Schneider. I thought your name was Sheila Buckley.
I go by both. It depends what the land titles say. Anyhow, I just live half a mile north of there, and all around there it's all, individual four-acre lots. So it just seems logical that this would also have four-acre lots on it as well. That's all.
Could I just get you to state your name for the record, please?
Oh, sorry. Sheila Schneider. Whoops.
Day. Thank you. Anyone else would like to come forward and speak in favor? Seeing no one, we'll ask for anyone in opposition, and I have no one on the list, but anyone in opposition would like to come forward? Seeing no one, any further questions from council? Councillor Comanche.
Thank you. Through the Reeve, this one is for the applicant. I noticed part of admin's reason to refuse was lack of consultation with landowners and neighbors. Yet, Ms. Schneider came up. Why is that?
When I talked to them, they suggested I go talk to the people to the north, which I've known for 20 years. So I went and talked to them, and they had no problem with us doing that. All the rest of the other ones are already 4 acres. It's kind of hard for them to say, I don't want another 4 acre near me. I didn't suggest doing that. It was just going to the people to the north because they had 20 acres.
So you get along with them all? I said you get along with them all?
Yeah, I've lived out there for 20 years.
Thank you.
Councillor Shule.
This one is to staff. I was looking at what I'm having trouble understanding. The City of Calgary administration believes that this doesn't align with IDP, and yet when the last map we showed is saying residential, I'm just trying to understand why they're saying what do they say it doesn't align with. If it's future residential, we're proposing residential.
Through the chair to Councillor Shule. So the Intermunicipal Development Plan in Section 8 identifies the policies within which applications within the growth corridor will be considered. The direction of the policy is such that applications shall be assessed in accordance with the relevant statutory plan. So the application has been assessed in accordance with the county plan, which is that relevant planning document. Because the application is inconsistent with the county plan, it is therefore inconsistent with the intermunicipal development plan.
Okay, you have to explain to me. I know I've read this here, and I still don't understand why. If it's a fragmented corridor, looks am I correct in saying that's not cannot be considered an infill?
Through the chair to Councillor Shule. So Section 10 of the county plan provides a definition of a fragmented quarter section. The subject land meets the definition of a fragmented quarter section, but then the policy goes on to require that any application for redesignation within a fragmented quarter meet the criteria set out in Section 10. So there are a range of criteria within Section 10.11 of the county plan, and the application does not meet any of the criteria listed there. So that's the reason for refusal in this particular case.
the criteria, that means the studies haven't been done, or what are you? Is that the criteria you're talking about because the studies haven't been done?
So the criteria includes preparation of a lot and road plan, technical assessments of on-site and off-site infrastructure, as well as that consultation with adjacent landowners. So it's all detailed there in the policy, but those are the primary criteria that would be required to be provided.
Okay, I think I understand.
Thank you. I see no further questions. And so, Council, any questions? Comments? No? Councillor's wish.
Going twice.
Councillor's wish. Councillor Shaw.
I'm a little torn up whether we should table this for the studies or proceed with closing the hearing. I think I'll take my gamble and go proceed with closing the hearing and see where it goes.
Your motion was to close the hearing?
Yes.
Okay. All in favor? That is carried. Councillor Shaw.
Okay. I'm going to make a motion for approval. The only thing that hasn't been done really is the studies, and 99, all of it can be really done is subdivision, but if council feels that we should only give them first reading until the studies are done, I'll be happy with that also. I do believe it is an infill. You can see just from around there, it is all 4-acre lots. When I'm having a little problem when they say it doesn't fit criteria, it maybe doesn't fit criteria because studies have not been completed. But I also understand from the landowner's situation is why would we be spending, again, all this hard-earned money for something that they would at least like to see. I'm sure that the will, that there is a will that this can get at least first reading. Thank you.
Go ahead, Ms. Zorski.
Mr. Reeve, if I may, I just wanted to make a couple of comments for clarification on the lot and road plan, if I could be permitted. It'll be quick.
I'm kind of stuck there. The hearing's closed, okay. So we'd be adding information, and I get slapped around over this now and again, so so I think if we can, we'll just carry on. Deputy Reeve Gautreaux.
Thank you, Mr. Reeve. I'm going to support my colleague's motion just because I do feel that, you know, it's 20 acres, and there's, of course, the other 20 acres there, but it is an infill. There is R2 all around it. It's just conforming with the entire area on 4-acre lots there. So I'm going to be supporting my colleague on this. Thanks.
You know, I'm going to support him too. I was always of the understanding that the Calgary corridor started at the bottom end, and they want greenfield development, and the rest of that area is pretty much developed with country residential, R2s. So I'm going to support that motion, and we'll see where it goes. Councillor Kometchi.
I too echo through the Reeve your sentiments, and you know he has been a long-time resident, spoke with his neighbors. The other parcels in the areas are similar. Let's just see the studies.
Anyone else?
Yeah, I could likely support first reading. I want to see these studies, though. We're supposed to be making educated decisions, and perhaps there's something up with that particular 40 acres or 20 acres. And it would be nice to see some coordination with the neighbors when the lot and road plan is completed, because we're also dealing with situations where that wasn't done and we're cleaning up messes. So partial support.
Thank you. Councillor Wright.
Through the Reeve, I agree with Councillor Hansen. I think first reading we could support, but I definitely need to see the studies as well. I don't think it's a matter of whether or not we can have the 4 acres. I just think we need to see the studies to support them.
Thank you. Anyone else? Oh, there is. Councillor Hinn.
I'd just like some clarification on the studies. What are we studying again?
just enlighten me.
Well, thanks for joining us. if I can, lot plan.
Mr. Chair.
Water, wastewater solutions. Well, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, if I can just help out here. Yep. If you go to page 2 of 27, under item number 2, those are the pieces of information that are required to support the Lawton and the Lawton Road Plan.
Okay. Are we clear? Did you want to close?
Yeah, I'll close.
Okay. Go ahead.
I'm going to make motion option for motion one that requirement for okay, just hang on, I got to read this thing here.
Didn't
it's not
we
what
that?
I was expecting. I'd like to give it. I'd like to give it first reading, and then I would first, and then I'm going to go back to these other motions and see where they fall.
Okay. All in favor? That is carried. Did it? Did you vote? Sorry.
Okay.
I saw that little hand go up. Councillor Shule.
Now I'm going to attempt at some of these other motions that they have different than what I was looking at. First of all, I would like to I'm going to go to motion two, but I need to change that wording a little. I don't think stormwater is part of the issue on this. I would like to see that deferred to subdivision. I will try that. And there is a good reason why I'm asking for that. Until they do do configuration of how the subdivision lots are filled, it's pretty difficult sometimes to do these stormwater plans. I'm just going back from what I've been hearing out the public. So I'm going to try that. If we lose that, then I will go on my second motion.
Councillor Gautreau.
Thank you. Motion two, just wanted to kind of go there, basically is deferring everything to subdivision stage. But on the other thing, would you know, what about a site-specific plan for stormwater in your motion? I'm just kind of throwing that out there. But motion two there is saying to defer to subdivision stage. But we also could do site-specific.
Go ahead, Mr. Riemann.
Mr. Chair, might I suggest a quick five-minute recess that we can talk with Councillor Shule and just get his intent clear so that we can create a motion that supports his desire.
Sure. Okay, we'll take a break for... Okay, we'll call the meeting back to order, and Councillor Shule.
Okay, I'm going to go through them just one at a time here. I am still going to try to option motion one that the requirement of Lawton Road Plan as policy 10.11 of the county plan be waived. I really do not see the necessity for this, so I'll try that.
Okay, any comments?
I'm going to have trouble with that.
Yeah, I don't think I'm there either. I would like to do the, as planned or as talked about, the first reading and give the applicant the confidence that council is behind the process. We'd just like to see what some of the issues are and get them settled and come back. So anyway, I see no further comments. All in favor? And recorded vote.
4.
Opposed.
Opposed.
I'm opposed.
In favor.
In favor.
In favor.
Opposed.
In favor.
And that is carried.
Okay, my next motion will be on motion 2. Okay, the motion two is what we were discussing. Where was that? Okay, here we go. That the supporting technical materials servicing concept. I want to make sure it's a concept stormwater plan and access as required by section 10 of the plan and the county servicing standard be provided prior to C7737 2017 being given second reading.
So I'm confused on that motion.
I will try. I'll try to get through.
Yeah, just take your time. We're not in a panic.
So maybe an explanation and then.
The reason I'm trying to say conceptual, because there's quite a difference between a full-blown stormwater and a conceptual. Conceptual can, I know maybe I'll just let Steph try to explain that one a little better than I. But what I see, I don't see doing a full-blown stormwater plan until subdivision time, which is normally when it's needed, because we don't, there's a lot of questions being arise till that happens. So this is more just of just a broad, high-level concept.
That's correct, Councillor Shule. Really, a conceptual stormwater plan gives us the basis of how stormwater is going to be dealt with on the lot, gives us the areas where water is going to go, but it doesn't give us specifics on volumes or necessarily the flow paths that it's going to take that way. That would be deferred in this case. If council was to support this, that would be deferred at the subdivision stage where it would be done under a site-specific implementation plan.
Thank you. So for clarification, this is really going to get deferred to subdivision. The word is subdivision, deferred to subdivision is not in there.
Subdivision will be the site-specific implementation plan. These items that are listed here would be provided prior to this bylaw coming back for second reading.
Thank you. Understand.
Any further questions? We will call the question. All in favor? That is carried. Councillor Shule, are we staying there? Or?
Well, obviously from that second motion, it kind of halts it until we get the rest of the information, so I'm not going to attempt and have this get lost. So I will
so
leave it.
Administration, do we need a motion to... clarify, or is it just go away, get the studies, and come back?
Administration is comfortable with this approach. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So you've been granted first reading and some conditions, so thank you. Okay, we are going to item D5, I think it is, isn't it?
Good morning, Council. Item D5 is in respect of the 2018 tax sale date and conditions. Properties with outstanding tax arrears which received tax notifications in 2017 are subject to Rocky View County's 2018 tax sale. This report is for Council to authorize 2 p.m. on Friday, April 20th, 2018, as the time and date of the tax sale, as well as to authorize the conditions that apply to the tax sale. Administration is recommending option 1, that the 2018 tax sale be held on April 20th, 2018 at 2 p.m., and that the sale conditions be as follows. Terms, cash or certified check. Deposit 10% of bid at the time of the sale on April 20th, 2018. And the balance of 90% of the bid within 30 days of receipt by Rocky View County. Goods and services tax applicable as per federal statutes. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
And I, whoop, Councillor Kissel.
Sorry, but being new, is this a standard thing we do every year?
Through the chair to Councillor Kissel, absolutely it is. It's a requirement under the MGA, and we have had a tax sale every year.
Thank you.
Deputy Reeve Control.
I was just going to make a motion for option 1.
Excellent. Go ahead.
So my motion would be for option 1, that the 2018 tax sale be held on April 20th, 2018 at 2 p.m., and that the sale conditions be as follows. Terms is cash certified check, deposit 10% of the bid at the time of sale on April 20th, 2018, balance of 90% of the bid within 30 days of receipt of Rocky View County's goods and services tax GST applicable as per federal statutes.
Thank you. Councillor Shule.
Just a quick question. How many, has there any been any of the lands that actually went to auction? Has that ever happened?
Through the chair to Councillor Shule, we have had a few properties that actually go up for sale. They have not actually sold at the tax sale. at which time the county has the option to take it into their name through tax forfeiture.
Thank you. Anything further? All in favor? And that is carried. Thank you. Mr. Wilson, D6.
Thank you and good morning, Reeve and councillors. Item D6 relates to an annexation proposal received from the Town of Cochrane. By way of general introduction for councillors who may not be familiar with annexation, annexations are often used to facilitate the expansion and growth of urban municipalities as land within their jurisdiction is exhausted. It can be for other reasons, but typically it's just because land is being exhausted. Broadly speaking, the annexation process proposed in this case is to enter into good faith negotiations with the intent of settling the proposed annexation through agreement. Following negotiations between the committee members from the town and the county, which may include mediation if required, a report on the negotiations will be brought back to council for consideration. A public consultation process must also be undertaken as part of the process. Providing general agreement is reached, which includes that consideration of public input, the annexation can simply be resolved by the minister through an annexation order. If, however, general agreement is not reached, the annexation is subject to a hearing to determine the matter. In this case, notice was submitted by the Town of Cochrane early in 2017 for this parcel that you see on the screen. It related to the southwest quarter of Section 16, Township 26, Range 4, west of the 5th Meridian. The purpose of the annexation was and still remains to be for the purposes of development of a new Rocky View High School campus, recreational uses and other public uses. Council appointed at the time Reeve Belke and the then Divisional 9 councillor to the negotiating committee. Ultimately, negotiations were not able to be finalised prior to the 2017 elections, and in discussions with the town, it was determined it should wait until the new year. On December the 28th, 2017, the Town of Cochrane provided additional correspondence indicating a desire to include Block 1, Plan 1364LK as part of negotiations for annexation, and that's the parcel you see here on the screen. The purpose of including the new land is to address access and intersection infrastructure development in Cochrane's northeast, specifically part of the Sunset Ridge community. The administrative recommendation and the suite of motions provided in the report would appoint the Reeve and Division 9 councillor to the negotiating committee and authorise the recommencement of those negotiations. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, could we get a motion to that effect? Councillor Kissel.
Thank you. I'm going to move that the receipt of the Town of Cochrane's request to add Block 1, Plan 1364LK to the proposed annexation area be acknowledged and that the county enter into an annexation negotiation.
Can we do this all as one motion?
Can we add the other one?
Omnibus. Okay, so just carry on, read the whole motion out.
You want me to read it all? Oh, my God. Here we go. Okay. There we go. And that the Division 9 Councillor Anne Reeve be appointed to the Annexation Negotiation Committee and that the administration be directed to assign two members of the administration as representatives on the Annexation Negotiation Committee and that the administration be directed to arrange a date for a negotiation committee meeting with the Town of Cochrane at the earliest possible mutually convenient date and begin the discussions.
Thank you. Do we have any discussion? We do. Councillor Hanson.
Maybe a potential friendly amendment. Could we think about adding our Deputy Reeve to the committee instead of our very busy Reeve? Because of the Municipal Growth Board.
If the Deputy Reeve is willing to take that role, I have no problem with it.
Future training.
Well, I have no problem with that. I mean, the Reeve is really busy, and, you know, I guess he's trying to train me to be like him one day. So, sure, I have no issue with that.
Okay, if that's a friendly amendment, we'll vote on that. All in favor? And that's better. So we'll call the question, all in favor as amended. And that is carried. Thank you. Mr. McCullough. D7.
Good morning, Council. Sue DeCon, Recreation and Community Services. The Langdon Recreation Special Tax Funding Grant Policy, Policy 322, exists to enhance the diversity and quality of recreation programs, projects, and special events in Langdon. This non-matching grant is an annual program funded through a special tax levy on households within the hamlet of Langdon. Nonprofit organizations submit applications between November 1st and November 30th annually. Funding requests are reviewed by administration based on Policy 322 criteria. All applications received in 2017 satisfied these criteria. Administration's recommendations require council approval before funds can be disbursed. Requests received during the 2017 intake period totaled $30,000 and are summarized in the table found in the report discussion on page 154 of the agenda. Based on four applications received, administration makes the following recommendations totaling $30,000. That 2017 Langdon Recreation Special Tax Grant funding be approved for the following community initiatives. Langdon Community Association, Baby Talk and Adopt a Planter programs, not to exceed $5,000. Langdon Community Association, maintenance of and services for the Langdon Fieldhouse, Community Rink and the Langdon Community Playground, and volunteer training, not to exceed $15,000. First Bow Valley Scouts, replacement and repair of outdoor activity equipment, not to exceed $5,000. And Synergy Youth and Community Development Society, program leader wages, volunteer bursaries, and program supplies, not to exceed $5,000. Resourcing of $84,657.98 is available through the 2017 Langdon Special Tax Levy, in addition to a Langdon Special Tax Reserve balance of $123,267.71 for a total of $207,925.69 available for distribution. Unless Council provides alternative direction, administration recommends option number one. This concludes administration's report. I am now available for questions.
You had fun with that one, didn't you? Councillor Shrew.
Okay, I do have a question on the Synergy Youth. From what I'm seeing here, are we paying for volunteers and leaders' wages? I need a clarification on this.
Through the chair to Councillor Shule, yes, we are providing funding for volunteer bursaries and program wages, programmer wages.
Okay, my next question is, what percentage of the Synergy Group actually come from the hamlet of Langdon? Because just so the rest of council understands, This levy is paid by people within the boundary of Langdon only, so I do have to answer to others why other areas are getting money.
Indeed. Through the chair to Councillor Shule, the Langdon, the programs that Synergy is providing are specific to children in Langdon. That's where the funding comes. So the programmers and the interns whose bursaries are being paid are actually coming to Langdon to provide programs for those children. The total number of children anticipated that they will reach is 70 children during the summer, and those children are provided access with recreation programs during the summer.
The 70 children a day from Langdon, is that what you're saying?
Yes, sir, they are from Langdon.
guess. I'll
let you talk. Okay. Councillor Comanche.
I think our mics are all kind of wonky today.
Yeah, because my mic's on too. Your mic is a controlling mic right now.
Beauty.
Mine is?
Just a question. What does that amount to per household in Langdon through the REIT?
Through the chair, are you referring to the amount per person, or at least per household, for the Langdon special tax?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just out of curiosity.
I believe it was about $84. $60. Okay, roughly.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Thank you, through the REIT.
Deputy REIT.
I have a problem with Synergy asking for recreation funding. I believe this program really belongs under FCSS on that side. It's up to the area councillor, but I just have a problem with that sitting on recreation instead of being on an FCSS program instead. But I will wait to hear what the supporting councillor has to say.
I guess I'm going to make a motion here to allocate money, funds to all of these groups. But there is a one provision that I want to make sure is very clear, that next year this money will most likely not be available to people like A and B and D, which probably could go to under SCSS programs. This recreation levy that was put into on Langdon was more to help maintenance of the parks and help the LCA with their building, and the rest of the funding was supposed to go capital funding for things like our rec facility that we're working very hard to get. So I will support this as a one-time deal, but I do with intent that that baby talk and that should be looking at other ways for funding. I know this came as an emergency item for them, and the second one, the Synergy and Youth Program, I don't believe it's the right fit here either. So we will do this one-time funding, but make it very that they understand that it may not be available next time. Thank you.
Councillor Hansen.
Moderately related, but was this fund for operational or capital projects? Listening to Al, it sounds like both. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Are we saving up for something, or are people in Langdon just having a hard time figuring out how to spend this money?
We are saving up for a recreation facility, which my beautiful community is going to be coming to ask you guys for a lot of money shortly.
Hey, any further comments? Now, the presenter did read the whole thing off. Does it need to be reread?
So, Mr. Chair, I generally don't mind using an omnibus-type motion when there's no risk of any of them being defeated. I heard the conversation around the table, and it doesn't appear that there's any risk, but in these types of situations, generally, we do like to see an individual motion for each component.
We'll do that. Now what do we got going on?
I was going to make the motion, read them off one at a time, I guess.
Just, what is this thing?
We've got to put more money in the meter.
This thing doesn't really help me a whole bunch. Where is this thing? Okay, Councillor Schulke.
Okay. I will go with first.
They're messing around with us.
With a Langdon community, I'll start all over. That the 2017 Langdon Recreation Special Tax Funding Grant be funded by and approved for the following community initiatives. I'll go with A first, Langdon Community Association, Baby Talk, and Adopt a Planner Program, not to exceed $5,000.
All in favor? That is carried.
My second one would be the Langdon Community Association Maintenance and Services for the Langdon Fieldhouse Community Rink and Langdon Community Playground and Volunteer Training, not to exceed $15,000.
All in favor? That is carried.
Next one, C, First Bowl Valley Scouts replacement and repair of outdoor activity equipment not to exceed $5,000.
All in favor? Carried.
And D, Synergy Youth and Community Development Society Program, leader wages, volunteer, whatever word that is, and program supplies not to exceed $5,000.
All in favor? That is carried. Oh, are you opposed?
You didn't give me a question. Oh, so I had my light on for response.
He doesn't give his mic up once he's gone. So we need a recorded vote. Sorry.
Can I have the mic for 2 seconds?
No,
I know
I
you called
so.
A question.
Go ahead.
So I do have a hard time supporting this last one just because it is an FCSS project. I don't think it fits in here. I know it's a small amount of money, but I just don't think it fits with under recreation of this piece. I think it really fits under FCSS, and that's why I wasn't going to support this piece.
Would that fit that? Under the cultural side of recreation?
It actually fits within the recreation side of recreation. This is a different sort of program. The children are provided with actual recreation activities at Langdon Park. So it's not typically what Synergy actually provides, but it is a recreation. It is a series of recreation activities during the summer.
Good. Thank you.
Day camp.
It's like a day camp, a rec day camp. I don't think I'm going to let you talk. You'll go on and on and on. Carry on, sorry.
To the chair, just to clarify, this is a situation within Langdon where we've got outstanding services that are required, and based on the fact that the county is based on indirect service delivery through funding partnerships, we were relying on a couple of years ago where Synergy came forward and they were willing to and prepared to provide for recreational programs. We took a look at the summer camps and they definitely fit within the mandate of recreation. However, with decline in funding available to them, now they're looking and pushing the boundaries, trying to get whatever they can funded because they are an eligible nonprofit through our existing policy. So administration is in the process of reviewing the bylaw and consequently the policy as well. And we'll be coming back in the next couple of months with a report with changes accordingly to making sure that we are tightening up the controls accordingly to meet council's expectations. In this situation, the $5,000 are going to specifically recreation programs that are not typically funded under FCSS. So again, it's a situation where we've got an organization with dual mandate.
Good. Thank you. We'll go to Councillor Kissel for a recorded vote.
In favor.
In favor.
In favor.
In favor.
I'm going to be opposed still.
Can't convince him. In favor.
In favor.
In favor.
In favor.
And that is carried. So thank you. I think we'll try to get D8 in if we can.
Perfect.
Kindly give us the report.
Agenda item D8 pertains to a census for 2018. A municipal census is a population count of the total number of individuals living in a certain area. In Alberta, the federal government and municipal governments have authority to conduct a municipal census. While the federal government completes a census every 5 years, every year ending in a 1 or a 6, the municipal government gives municipalities the authority to conduct a census every year. The most recent federal census occurred in 2016, and the most recent Rocky View County census was conducted in 2013. Between 2006 and 2011, the population of Rocky View County grew by 7.7%. Between 2011 and 2013, it grew by 6.5%. Between 2013 and 2016, it grew by 3.55%. In the past 2 years, Rocky View County has experienced growth in its assessment, and it is possible that this has resulted in an increase in population, which may mean that the 2016 census data is no longer current. It was Rocky View County's intention to conduct a census every 3 years, with one scheduled for 2016. Given that the federal census was held in May 2016, council at the time decided to delay the municipal census for the following reasons: survey fatigue, residents would be reluctant to answer two long questionnaires back to back. The federal census would already collect the required information we would collect. It would be inefficient to spend taxpayer dollars to complete a municipal census at the same time as the federal government. Instead, council directed administration to develop a policy to conduct a municipal census commencing 2 years after each federal census. In response to that direction, administration has prepared a census policy for consideration at the Policy and Priorities Committee that would set out the rules for conducting a municipal census in Rocky Butte County. The benefit of current census information is that it provides guidance for service delivery and decision-making processes. Population size also affects the Municipal Sustainability Initiatives, MSI grant, funding that the county receives annually. Therefore, if the county's population is increased, this would mean an increase in grant funding. This matter is in front of council for its direction of whether administration should proceed with a census in 2018 as promotion number one, and if council provides for a census to be conducted, that an interim budget adjustment of $130,000 be approved to cover the costs of conducting a census as promotion number two. Subject to any questions you may have, that concludes my presentation.
Thank you. Deputy Reeve Cottrell.
Thank you. I'm just wondering if there's any way, I know there's a notice of motion coming forward from Councillor Wright, but is there any way we might be able to piggyback this census onto a voters list?
So, through the chair, the two are related to a certain extent, but generally a voters list and enumeration that's associated with a voters list happens in the year that you're actually going to conduct an election. So this will help us, and it'll inform, if you recall, actually I guess I'm talking to a relatively new group of councillors, but if you recall, when we tried to do attempted to do a boundary adjustment prior to the election, one of the directions that council gave us at that time was to take that project and continue into the new term of the new council. And so this census is one of the tools that we will use in part of that review. So it does relate to the election, but not directly to the voters list yet.
And then just a follow-up question then. So when's the next federal census? See, you don't, their mics are going to get controlled.
I've been told 2021.
2021. So then we're 2 years after every federal one. Like, you know, I'm in support of a census just because it does go by population. And that's where we get our money from for MSI grants. So anyway, I'll leave it from there.
Councillor Hansen.
I assume we will have a lot of input as to the questions that are on the census. I think ahead that we're doing some strategic planning here. And
through the chair to Councillor Hansen, absolutely. We will bring those questions forward to council. There are a certain amount of perhaps base questions that we'll ask, but there are opportunities to ask additional questions. So, yes, council will see that.
Thank you.
Councillor McCullough.
Thank you. Through the chair, and probably a follow-on to Councillor Hansen's question, I guess what type of information beyond population do we typically collect? And my next question to that was, is this a good time to ask our population other things that we sort of, you know, and I come, you know, in my mind, I think of recreation and, you know, we just had the special levy in Langdon. You know, maybe we can do something else there if people are open to that. So I don't want to muddy the waters at all, but I guess, is this our opportunity? Because people do get survey fatigue if we continue to ask them questions all the time.
Sure. Through the chair to Councillor McCullough, it is an opportunity for us to gather information. And if I think back to the 2013 census, we did ask things like, where do you work? What areas do you, oh, I'm just being handed the questionnaire. So things like what type of school status you have, those types of things, where do you work? I think we've had some transportation questions in there, the type of employment that they're in, things like, in this case, we asked some things about high-speed internet. So there is an opportunity to ask a wide array of questions. Now, I just would caution that. I would add some caution to that is that you don't want to make it to such that people are annoyed by answering it. I would also add that there are other tools as well, and through our communications group in 2018, we are considering some polling of people, citizen satisfaction surveys. And those are another tool that people can use to gather some of the information that let's say we don't want to put onto the census.
Thank you. Two more questions. What was the cost of the last census? And what was our respondent, like what was our return rate? How many people actually completed the census? Do we get statistical relevant data?
I'm almost tempted to ask Ms. Tink to come and answer those questions because she's answered every one and I feel like I have a hand at my back.
So your first question was, sorry, could you, pardon me?
Cost.
Oh, the cost. So the actuals for the 2013 census were 117,000 approximately, and we had a 93% participation rate.
Any further questions?
I also wanted to add, with respect to the policy that's coming forward, if this is approved to the Policy and Priorities Committee, is that we're leaving the decision to conducting a policy to be decided, or we're suggesting that it be decided at the annual organizational meeting, so it would, a presentation would be given then for council to decide. So whether we determine to do it every year, it doesn't have to happen. It'll be determined at the organizational meeting.
Okay, thank you for that. Could we get a motion? Councillor Hansen.
I'd like to move that administration be authorized to conduct a Rocky View County census for 2018 and that an interim budget adjustment of $130,000 be approved for the 2018 Rocky View County census as per Attachment A.
Any input? We do have. Deputy Reeve Gautreau.
I just was going to support his motion. Just I think, you know, if we do a census, it's going to spend $130,000 is actually going to increase our monies from the MSI grants.
And any further comment? All in favor?
Unless we're shrinking.
That is carried. Yeah, then we don't like it. While you're there, have you got, let's just do D9 and then we'll break for lunch.
The purpose of this report is for the appointment of one member at large to the Rocky View Central District Recreation Board. At its annual organizational meeting, Council appoints members at large to sit on various boards and committees. Several of these positions remained vacant after the 2017 organizational meeting due to a lack of applicants. Administration received direction from Council to re-advertise for the remaining vacant positions and has received an application from Jackie Dimert for the Rocky View Central District Recreation Board as a member at large from east of Highway 2. Councillor Henn is appointed to the board as the area councillor, and with the appointment of Jackie Dimert as a final member at large, all positions of the Rocky View Central District Recreation Board will be filled. Administration is recommending option one.
Thank you. Councillor Henn.
I move that we go with option one, that Jackie Dimert be appointed to the Rocky View Central District Recreation Board as a member at large from east of Highway 2 for a 3-year term to expire at the organizational meeting on October 2020.
Thank you. Any comments? Seeing none, all in favor? That is carried, and we need a motion to go in camera.
Mr. Chair, I would ask, you do have guests for lunch today.
Oh, that's right.
So we could probably defer the K item until later on in the meeting.
Yes, sir. Thank you. So we'll adjourn now for lunch and be back at 1:30. Okay, I'm ready. Let's call the meeting back to order. And we'll carry on with D10. Mr. Riemann.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Item D10 is administration's response to a notice motion that was made by Deputy Reeve on January 9th. And in summary, that notice of motion was for administration to look and assess and generate a draft letter for concerns that have been going on from a speed reduction made by Alberta Transportation on Highway 1 to the east side of the city of Chestermere. In short, spring of last year, Alberta Transportation had completed some assessments based on concerns for the use of Highway 1 in the intersection of 791, and virtually their result to try, or their sort of interim fix of that area, was to reduce the speed from 110 down to 80 k's an hour.
Our residents of the area, other motorists have provided concerns with that speed reduction, now citing concerns of other traffic issues in terms of people not following the speed limit or people approaching them at a higher rate of speed when they are driving the speed limit, and there are concerns about rear-ending accidents. So the motion itself was to generate a letter. The draft letter has been attached to the package for council's consideration, and I'm available for questions.
Not all at once. Deputy Reeve Gautreaux.
I have no questions on it. I think the letter itself, the draft letter that's in our package, is states what our needs are, complying with what our residents want, and it's done in a professional, delegate manner that will, you know, because there's other concerns out there as well. So I think it was professionally done, and I thank you for that.
Councillor Shule.
Well, I did a lot of hard thinking on this one here, and I do agree strongly that something's got to be done there. Reducing the speed limit is not the answer. So with the way I read this letter, it pretty well kicks it back to Alberta Transportation to come up with a better solution or a different solution. I know we've had several meetings and a lot of roundtable discussions on this with other municipalities, et cetera. I don't think it's up to Rocky View to find a solution for that or even stipulate a solution. I know there was some mention from others saying that we should be stating a solution in here. I have trouble with us providing a solution because that's not in our jurisdiction. And furthermore, it should be something that either... somebody like Bunt or somebody that does transportation consultant that does that. But I would really like to kick this back to the province and really let them have a hard look at how they can address this better. I know there's a lot of different ways that it can be temporarily addressed, but reducing the speed limit is definitely not it.
Deputy Reeve Gautreaux.
So on that note, I would like to move option one, that on behalf of Rockview County Council, the Reeve shall submit a letter to the Minister of Transportation advising the safety concerns on the stretch of highway, that the speed limit should be returned to 110 kilometers an hour. And then I just have one question for Mr. Raymer. Has there been a study from Garden Road to Highway 9 on that corridor or maybe how that traffic should maybe move?
Through you, Mr. Chair. Just so I can gain some further clarification, when you're indicating how traffic should move, I think what you're looking for is access management principles of Highway 1. And I can give council as a whole that back in 2006, there were two studies that were completed by Alberta Transportation in terms of the highway access management principles related to Highway 1, which in true sense is a freeway. And it was divided up on the east side and the west side. And the east side was from the City of Calgary boundary all the way to the Saskatchewan border, and on the west side, again, from the City of Calgary boundaries all the way to the Banff Park entrance gate. The principle of both studies was to understand and delineate where appropriate interchanges are going to be located, where access points are going to be eliminated, and how the highway function was going to be looked at into the future. Both those studies have been in play quite a while. They are, I virtually would call them policies that Alberta Transportation continues to use when they look at interchange development or access points on the highway.
Thank you very much. So, again, I've moved option one, and I hope for my colleagues to support this. Thank you.
I am going to support that. I would like just to, should we not have another motion or a follow-up motion that encourages them to investigate? Like, this may be seen as, okay, you don't like it, we're not going to do anything. I'm one of the ones that he's talking about that said maybe we should send an alternative suggestion of some type of solution to this issue.
To you, Mr. Chair, from what I understand of how the speed revision even took place, was there was an open house or a gathering of affected landowners, concerned residents, and Alberta Transportation provided 8 options for consideration. Some of those options were looking at closing the intersection off.
Some of those options we're trying to reroute in terms of right in, right out, in terms of north and south access. And from all that, what Alberta Transportation considered as the best option was to try the speed reduction. I think our letter that is going to the minister is, again, citing that we're still concerned. We still see evidence of concern that the reduction is not working. And I think we could also maybe add to the letter that we want them to reconsider some of the options that were already presented in play.
Okay, thank you. Councillor McCarley.
Thank you. Through the chair, I'm going to support this, but I do have concerns that we're stating we're not going to provide a solution as Rocky View, but we are providing a solution by saying we're going to return the speed to 110 kilometers. So I have no problem kicking this back to the government, to Alberta government, but I don't think we should be making a recommendation. I think our letter should be to encourage them to find the appropriate solution without us suggesting one.
Thank you. Mr. Riemann.
And just for information, Mr. Chairman, and thank you. The letter itself, again, is providing that solution. Unfortunately, it's an expensive one. And it's Alberta Transportation, you have gone forward and you have established a functional plan that says there's a need for an interchange here. That is the ultimate solution. I think this letter also cites back to the province. Maybe it's time you start looking at an interim plan that starts to take the final shape of the ultimate plan, which is the interchange, and then it's not throwaway money as well.
Councillor Hansen.
So is there any merit to the thinking that if the speed limit returns, we're seeing that there isn't a problem and the province really, really sidelining that interchange, if the 110 is sufficient now that we've built the access lanes that weren't there before?
Maybe try me one more time on the question there.
I can't help it. I'm an engineer. No. Not in the 3 year, but at some distant future, there should be an interchange there. If we're suggesting we put it back to 110, then perhaps the need for that interchange is diminished, and it would just stretch out when that actually occurs. Are we supporting delaying the interchange by this activity? That's my big question.
Through you, Mr. Chair, I don't think we're doing that at all. In fact, the province has already taken that intersection and created some longer acceleration-deceleration lanes to support where would the ultimate plan be of an interchange. So I don't think it's prolonging. It's suggesting that we're okay with it being delayed. I think the pressures from, one, the city of Chestermere and the regional area supporting the need for an interchange is going to start showing itself more and more. We've seen all the way along Highway 1 on the east side and Highway 1 on the west side that the current freeway laning and the need for access proper access points are quite a provincial problem, because a lot of those interchanges that are currently there are outdated and are not providing the access or the service that they need because of the access requirements. So I think the province has a situation here where we need to address all the interchanges located within the regional area. Rockview County has generated our special transportation levies to try to assist the province. So I think we're doing our part. I think it's now up to us to expect the province to do their part and start putting some money towards some of the interchange requirements here.
Thank you. I meant to ask you, with the configuration at 791 and then a half a mile west is 281, and it's, again, you can cross the highway there. Is there any mention, like in a follow-up or this letter, are we passing, if we pass this motion, are we passing that the letter is good as written, or can it be altered at that point? Because I think one of these intersections should be addressed. When you got half a mile and people can cross the highway at 791 and then back at 281, it should become very apparent that there's a problem.
Through to you, Mr. Chair, and what I'm putting up on the board here is the current approved configuration for 791 and Highway 1. And your concern that you're bringing forth is the access point for Range Road 281. And ultimately, that access point is eliminated through this plan. So the province is already looking at that, going, okay, what do we take away to make sure that we have a proper interchange and proper access management towards the development of this interchange?
No, I know that one. Now, this isn't going to happen for a lot of years. So actually, I was wrong. What I was talking about is the acceleration lane going west lasts till within a half a mile of 281. So right now, you can come out 281 where it's blocked off on this new diagram, but you can still cross the highway there today.
Yeah.
And so it's creating a very dangerous situation. The acceleration lane goes within a half a mile. Somebody pops out there, and, you know, one of them should be addressed.
Sure. Very similar to what we saw the province implement on Range Road 283, further to the west of the town of Chestermere. They eliminated that access point. They have provided notice to both us and Chestermere that at a point in time in the very near future, Range Road 281 is also going to be taken out of access. So I think it's already in play in terms of how they're trying to serve that area and improve the safety of the road itself.
Okay. Councillor Shule.
I just wanted to mention again, I don't think it's up to, I know I'm no traffic expert, and it's not up to us as a councillor to say what needs to be done. All we know is in this case here, they've reduced reduced the speed limit, which didn't correct the problem. So I think we need to throw it back to the province and let their experts say what is safe and what's not safe, whether which intersection needs to be closed or not closed. I don't know. So I do understand where the reeve is going from, but I think maybe we're just kind of stepping out of our comfort zone here. So.
Geez, before I bury myself, I'm going to call a question. Anybody further comments? No? All in favor? It's unanimous. So we will send the letter. Thank you. I see our guest is here, so we can go on to, are we prepared to go on to E1?
Thank you, Mr. Reeve. Good afternoon, Council. My name is Johnson Kwan from Planning Services. Item E1 and E2 is for the Winter Green applications. E1 is for the conceptual scheme. E2 is for the proposed DC bylaw. Just as a refresher, the subject land is located in the North Brad Creek area, approximately 2 miles north of the hamlet of Brad Creek. As we can see on the map here, surrounding area to the north is mainly country residential developments. To the east is Sutina Nation Reserve. To the south is fragmented quarter sections, and to the west is mainly forested area. There are two proposed bylaw being presented concurrently for Council's considerations. First one is bylaw C7709-2017. This bylaw is to amend the Greater Brad Creek Area Structure Plan by adopting the proposed conceptual scheme. Second bylaw is C7710-2017. This bylaw is to redesignate the subject land from the current recreational business district to a proposed direct control district. As we can see here in this figure, there's 3 cells in the proposed DC bylaw. Cell A consists of approximately 280 residential units. Cell B with the 100-room hotels, the 10,000 square feet commercial space, and approximately 24 units of row house style developments. Cell C would be the existing golf course that continues its seasonal operations. On November 28, 2017, both applications were presented for Council's considerations. Council closed the public hearing and gave first and second reading to both bylaws. Council also directed administrations to work with the applicant and the landowners to address the list of outstanding technical issues in the report, including water servicing, wastewater servicing, stormwater management, transportations on-site, off-site, and emergency egress, as well as municipal reserve and open space policies. We've met with the applicants and the landowners for two occasions in December of 2017 to discuss the applications. Today, no additional information or new technical studies have been provided to address the outstanding technical issues. There are 57 proposed amendments in the report, two of which are proposed by the applicant. First one, it's amendment number 17, related to the hotel. The applicants agreed to reduce the hotel from 100 rooms to 50 rooms. Applicant also indicated that they would be considering removing the hotel should that be council's directions. Second amendment relates to Wintergreen Road upgrades. That's amendment number 37. We've talked about this at the public hearings. The original wording in the conceptual scheme, it's county, Rocky View County and the developer shall share the cost of upgrade. The proposed amendment now reads Rocky View County and the developer shall explore cost contributions for Wintergreen Road upgrades. Again, administration disagree with the proposed amendments because it's county's practice and policy to make sure the developers is responsible for all on-site and off-site infrastructure upgrade. This is to make sure that the proposed developments do not create additional financial burdens for the county's ratepayers. In keeping with council's motions and also council adopted policy and standards, we've prepared the rest of the amendments for council's considerations. These amendments would capture the outstanding technical requirements and defer them to future subdivisions and development permit stage. And topics include water servicing, wastewater servicing, stormwater management, transportations on-site and off-site, as well as cost contributions to the emergency egress. We've often been asked whether we can defer these requirements to future subdivision stage. And for smaller, less complex applications, there's been occasions where we defer these requirements. However, in this case, we're looking at a comprehensive applications creating a community with over 300 residents. There's not just one, but multiple deficiency in the technical submissions. There's three major risks in deferring the technical requirements. The first, it's council and the county will not be able to fully understand the impacts and the viability of the proposed developments. Without fully understanding the proposal, council and the county also will not be able to adequately address and mitigate impacts as a result of the proposal. And lastly, any technical information in any of the potential requirements will be subject to appeal. In this case, this would be outside of council's jurisdictions and will go to the municipal government board. If we put aside the timing of the technical requirements and look at these applications based on the two basic criteria in the Municipal Government Act, we can see there's still some fundamental issues with the applications. In accordance with the Municipal Government Act, one of the main purposes of the municipality is to develop and maintain a safe and viable community. So is this safe? Based on administration's assessment, it's not safe to create a community with 300 or more residents in an isolated, slippery slope area of high to extreme wildfire risk and a single internal road that funnel all the traffic onto a single access, also without an emergency egress in the area. Is this proposal viable? The applicant has not demonstrated the proposal would be viable without 80% of the water capacity needed to service developments, without the detailed wastewater analysis for the on-site and off-site options, without a full understanding of the potential drainage impact to the surrounding area, and without a full understanding of the local and regional traffic impacts. Given the fact that there are fundamental issues with the applications, such as potentially putting 300 or more residents at risk in emergency situations, and the applicant has not demonstrated that the subject land is capable of or suitable for the proposed developments, administration retained the original recommendations and recommend refusal of the applications. There are four options in the staff report. Just want to briefly provide council a few of the options. Option number one, this would approve the applications with the proposed amendments. The proposed amendments, like I say, will defer the technical requirements to future subdivisions and development permit stage. One of the amendments, as mentioned, would require the county and the developer to explore cost contributions for Wintergreen Road upgrades at the time of subdivisions. Option number two, this would approve the applications without any proposed amendments. This would require the county to share the cost of Winter Green Road upgrades. And as mentioned in the staff report, currently the Winter Green Road upgrade is not part of the road program. Option number three, this would refuse the applications, and this is the recommendations by administrations. And option number four, council can provide other alternatives to administrations. This concludes my presentations, and we're here to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. I see no questions. So, Councillor Kmet G.
Mr. Kwan, out of the 55 amendments that are made to since the last time, is that a normal amount with regards to coming back to ask for third reading? Do you feel, in your professional opinion, there's been enough change?
Through the whip to Councillor Kamachi. As mentioned, the proposed amendment, 55 of them were proposed by the by administrations, and these amendments only defer the requirements to a later stage. And if we defer this requirement to a later stage, those would be subject to appeal.
So when you refer to a later stage, is that subdivision stage?
Through the reef. Through the reef. My apologies. That's correct. That's subdivisions.
And I just want to make sure I've been doing my own little grassroots homework here. So if it were to end up in subdivision stage, do we as council lose any control of how this development or any development in Rocky View progresses?
Again, through the reef to Councillor Kamachi, if the applications go to subdivision stage, it will still be presented in front of council. However, any conditions or any information be considered at the subdivision stage can be subject to appeal. If the application is being appealed, it will go to the municipal government board in this case, and it will be outside of council's jurisdictions.
Okay. Deputy Reeve Gautreau.
Thank you. Just through the Reeve, through all these amendments, is this new to me, previously from reading one to the other, there's a whole bunch of new information in here that we're receiving today.
Through the Reeve to Deputy Reeve Gautreau. The proposed amendments, like we mentioned, is consistent with the county policy and standards. So what we've done is making sure the county policy and standards are being embedded in the conceptual scheme and the DC bylaw.
Could I, at this point, I'll ask, I see we have legal in the house. Could you give us an opinion on this? When you do amendments after second reading, is that bringing in new information that is out of line with the public hearing process?
Well, first question I will ask, because I'm going to be giving you legal advice, is do you want to have that legal advice presented to you in public, or do you want to go in camera? That's council's option.
I don't see the board lighting up, so I think I don't see why it can't be done in public. Thank you.
And that's a fair comment. The first place we start in this kind of a discussion is Section 230 of the Municipal Government Act, and specifically under Section 230 sub 5 of the Municipal Government Act. And to be clear, to give Council a bit of a roadmap in this discussion, I'm going to talk about two baskets. One's going to be your statutory rights, and the other is going to be about procedural fairness, which is a common law concept, okay? So the first place we're going to go is into the statutory discussion, and the relevant section, again, is Section 230 sub 5 of the Municipal Government Act. And that states that after considering the representations made to it about a proposed bylaw at a public hearing, and after considering any other matter it considers appropriate, council may pass the bylaw or resolution, make an amendment to the bylaw, or defeat the bylaw. So 230, just on the face of it, does allow council to make amendments to bylaws after the public hearing. However, in my opinion, that's not the end of the discussion. The discussion will be what is the nature of those amendments? Are they substantive? In other words, was it a chicken that was being discussed at the public hearing and now we've turned it into a duck? And in that case, in my opinion, that might trigger a requirement to do a new public hearing. Or if council has had substantive new information presented to it that was not discussed at the first public hearing, that, in my opinion, would also, from a common law procedural fairness perspective, trigger the requirement to do a new public hearing. And in fact, council did that with the Conrich Area Structure Plan. After public hearing, there was new information brought in. There were some potentially substantive amendments made, and there was council reopened the public hearing to talk about that new information. So back to the specific question posed by the Reeve is, would the amendments constitute new information? It depends. It depends on the nature of the amendments, and it depends on the nature of the information that was submitted that triggered those amendments after the public hearing.
Thanks. It's as clear as mud. I guess then the substantial, were the amendments, is the question, were they substantive enough to result in an actual change? From what we've heard in the report we just saw, that there are whatever changes are being put off to subdivision at any rate. So, but I'll go back to Councillor Camacci.
So in the new proposal brought forth today, one of the changes was from a 100-room hotel cut in half to 50. Would that equate to a substantive change that would require a public hearing?
And through the Reeve, the question would be, was that change made as a result of information council received at that public hearing? Because if that's the case, we heard these concerns about the size of the hotel and we cut it back, then I would say, no, you took that information, you applied it, and that's why the amendment came. But I am going to raise the issue, as I understand that the applicant was invited to speak specifically to council subsequent to the public hearing. And that is another issue that council needs to think about, is what was the nature of that information received from the applicant outside of the public hearing? Because again, if council has some concern, the prudent thing is to reopen the public hearing to deal specifically with only that new information that would give other interested parties the opportunity to speak to it. So that, and again, I wasn't there, I wasn't present at that hearing, at that meeting, so I don't know the substantive nature of what the applicant said, but if there's any question in council's mind, especially given the nature of this kind of an application, my advice would be to consider taking a more prudent approach to procedural fairness on this point.
Councillor Shul.
The wrong button. Okay, thanks. I just want to make a quick comment here. I see we're going roundtable discussion without a motion. It'd be nice to have a motion on the floor, and then I can speak to it. So if we can either continue speaking on this here, or we're going to get a motion on the floor, is my question. If we are going to go around the table, then I got a bunch of comments.
I think right now I would suggest that we're just trying to get some information to make so that the area councillor can make an educated motion. So I think it's healthy conversation right now. Councillor Wright.
Through the Reeve, did we not receive a request to hear from the public? And would that this be the time to bring that up? I thought there was an email that was sent with requests from the public.
There was, I guess, two emails. So we haven't had a motion to that effect yet. We'll get back to you. Lots of time. Take it easy. Calm down.
We want to do this right.
Sorry. I don't want to rush you.
Yeah. Through the Reeve. There, I said it this time. My apologies. So, again, thank you for your counsel. So just so that I understand, if we didn't allow rebuttal last time, we've opened ourselves up to judicial review. Like, if we're not following the proper rules and procedures by doing that?
Through the Reeve, I don't know that it would be successful. However, if it's a big enough concern, someone's going to try and find a way to challenge. And by having the applicant speak to this application outside of the context of a formal public hearing, I think that opens that possibility. I'm not saying that it would be successful, but anyone can go to the Court of Queen's Bench and file a judicial review notice of application. My other point, and I apologize, it's not directly to the question of the councillor, is this question that I heard that there were requests for public input. My caution to council is you cannot just do ad hoc public input. If you're going to hear from the public, you have got to go back and advertise, give notice, and come. You can limit the scope of what you do in the new public hearing, obviously, but you do have to go through all the formalities of advertising and notice, so just be mindful of that. There's no being half pregnant with public hearings.
Councillor Shule.
I guess I'll start to try to help our friendly councillor out in that area. If there was a motion to give third reading, I wouldn't support it. I will not support refusal either. The only thing I'll support is to reopen the hearing again. I will not support ad hoc people coming in just to speak to us unless everybody has a fair process. So I guess that's my position. If the councillor of the area said we'll make a motion to reopen the hearing, he'll have my full support. Other than that, I will not be supporting it. Thank you.
So we'll go to Councillor Comanche.
Through the Reeve, thank you, Councillor Shule. I think that in spite of new information trying to be brought for us with the public speaking, with amendments that deem to be different, I think probably the best route, given that, you know, it is a very contentious issue, that it be fair for all parties to go through the possible public hearing process again. And I don't know if it's option three, whether it's through refusal, but I understand through refusal we are still open to a judicial review. So I don't know, I might request a request to maybe convene with admin just to help me with a motion that allows us to circumvent any kind of judicial review and abide by the Municipal Government Act. Does that make sense?
If I could, you're not going to circumvent a potential judicial review. It's like suit. I don't like the color of Mr. Riemann's tie. I could sue him for it, but I might not be successful. It's a very nice tie, by the way. But that part of it, I think if you want to reopen the hearing, you could craft a motion to that effect to allow more input would be prudent on the way we're going. Who are we at? Deputy Reeve, control.
So my question is then, as we have two E items, and they're both with, you know, one's with an area structure plan, and the other one was with, you know, redesignation. And I'm wondering, we combined those two last time together. Are we combining them this time together? Or, you know, I'm not 100% sure, because I'm kind of leaning with my colleague, Councillor Shule, as well. But are we looking at E1 and E2 together or not?
We ran them concurrently the last time, and we could do the same thing. They show up separately in the agenda, but we did run them side by side. So that will be up to the area councillor. So we'll hear from Mr. Councillor Hansen.
And a question for council through the Reeve. Are we even allowed to open a public hearing again after second reading?
Through the Reeve, yes. There's nothing in the Municipal Government Act that prevents it. What Section 230 says is that prior to second reading, you have to hold a public hearing. So that's a prerequisite for second reading.
It's not exclusive then.
You can do public, you can do your public hearing, I think Rocky does, even before first reading. As long as that box is ticked before second reading, you proceed to second reading. But again, depending on what happens after that second reading and directions from council, that's where there is going to be substantive change, again, from a procedural fairness perspective. That's where you've seen these hearings be reopened to talk about that new information. And there's nothing in the Municipal Government Act, in my opinion, that precludes council from doing it. And in fact, the entire underlying premise of Part 17 is public consultation, transparency, openness, input. And I cannot imagine a court in Alberta would be critical of a council bending over backwards to ensure that everyone had proper input before council gave its final consideration on third reading.
So a follow-on question. Given the interesting nature in which we've been receiving information on this matter, does this public hearing just have to be for new information, or can we just hit the reset button and start over again?
My advice would be that you limit your scope to the new information that's been received. My opinion, to ensure that there's fairness for the applicant as well, you don't want to just hit the reset button after second reading and now do your a brand new public hearing. I think that if you want to do that, you'd rescind second reading, reopen your public hearing to start again, and then move forward with then consider second reading a second time. It might be a bit of a fine procedural point, but again, I'm just looking at the fairness perspective from the applicant as well, because you don't just simply want to basically defeat this concept of a public hearing before a second reading by hitting the reset after second reading.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we'll take, what do you want, 5 minutes, 10 minutes? Ten. Say ten, we'll come back in five.
Ten.
Okay, we'll call the meeting back to order. And Councillor Comanche, do you have a motion?
Through the reeve, I want to thank admin and thank councillors. The motion I would like to make, can I say something before I actually make the motion?
Yep.
So, again, being a resident involved with this process, I was hoping to see a lot more come back from the November 28th meeting. At the end of the day, you know, we as councillors, as the MGA states, you know, the main purposes of a municipality is to develop and maintain safe and viable communities. And right now, given Wintergreen Road, egress, things like that, number one concern, given technical issues, is the safety of those residents or any residents in Rocky View. So I will motion that we go with option three, which would refuse the application.
Deputy Reeve Gautreau.
So I just need some clarification again, and I asked this, and I kind of got an answer. I know we ran both these concurrent last time. Are we running them concurrent now, or are you making a motion for E1 and then E2?
I'd seek advice on in terms of if we could do E1 and E2, then it'd make the process much simpler.
It just means two motions is all. So we'll deal with E1 right now, if that's okay, and then we'll have a subsequent motion on E2. Any further questions? Seeing none, I will call the question. All in favor? And recorded vote. Councillor Comanche.
In favor.
In favor.
In favor.
In favor.
Opposed.
Opposed.
In favor.
In favor.
In favor.
That is carried. Do you want to report on E2? Or do you want to just make a motion on E2?
I'll just make the motion.
They were concurrent.
Yeah. So with regards to E2, I motion that application PL 2015500 be refused.
Any comments? If not, I'll call the question. All in favor? And recorded vote, Councillor Kissel.
In favor.
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 Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't see his hand. He was he's inconsistent in his voting. That is carried unanimously. Sorry about the recorded vote. We'll go to E3, Division 9.
Okay, if we could get your report, please. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Reeve and councillors. I'm Megan Norman speaking on behalf of Planning Services for item E3, which is in Division 9. The subject lands are located west of Range Road 41 off Camden Lane. The purpose of the application is to redesignate the subject lands from Agricultural Holdings District to Residential 2 District to facilitate the creation of 3 residential lots. The proposed development conforms to the purpose and intent of the Residential 2 District in the Land Use Bylaw and meets the intent of the Cochrane North Area Structure Plan. On January 9th, this redesignation application was presented to Council. Council closed the public hearing and granted first and second reading to the bylaw. The bylaw is now back at Council today for third and final reading. Administration is recommending approval in accordance with option 1 for reasons of the application is consistent with the overall vision for the residential infill development within the Cochrane North Area Structure Plan. The application complies with the minimum parcel size of the Cochrane North ASP for residential infill area C. The proposed development conforms to the purpose and intent of the Residential 2 District of the Land Use Bylaw. The applicant submitted a road concept drawing, which administration determines to be adequate justification to demonstrate that a modified country residential standard road can be accommodated within a 20-meter right-of-way, and all technical concerns can be addressed through the conditions of approval for subdivision. That concludes my presentation.
Thank you. If I can address legal counsel, I understand there was some letters that were brought to the attention of administration and the area councillor that were in our possession that didn't get circulated to council before the public hearing. What is a recommendation or advice?
And again, Mr. Reeve, I'm going to, my first question to you will be, do you want to hear this advice in public or do you want to go in camera to get my legal advice?
We held the public hearing, and the key word was public. somewhere along the line, these 3 letters were misplaced or just didn't get in the file. So what would you do with 3 letters and people had an interest in this?
Ask us if you want to go on camera.
I don't want to go on camera. Was that the simple answer?
Okay. Well, Council, once again, you have an option. The question will be, the public hearing was held. The question would be, do these letters, and I appreciate that they didn't come before council for the public hearing. The question would be, do they bring forward any new substantive information that council did not hear from the residents who spoke at the public hearing? And my advice would be, if those letters do have additional substantive information, you may want to consider from a procedural fairness perspective to reopen the public hearing and hear from these parties with respect to the letters and allow the applicant to respond to them. However, if the information is not new, it is consistent with what council heard at the public hearing, in my opinion, it would not be necessary for council to reopen the public hearing from a procedural fairness perspective. And the reason for that would be is that the applicant's letters may not have come forward to council, but their concerns were heard by council. If the concerns were about traffic and other consistent matters, that those substantive concerns were heard and considered by council before it made its decision. If that line is clear.
I almost understand. Thank you. Thank you for your report. Do you, Councillor Kissel, have a direction?
I do. So I think it's our job at Rocky View County to look after both the interests of the resident and the applicant. It is their right to write in letters, which they did. They took time out of their day. Whether we agree with what's on it or not, whether it's been repeated through somebody else's letter, they have the right to have that letter put in there. And that's very clear in the MGA how it works. I think that personally, because they were not included, the dates on a couple of these letters were August, so it wasn't like we kind of got them last minute and they just got missed. They got missed. And whether these people say, I don't like this application because I think there's too many blue cars going to be going down the road. It is not our choice as a board or council to decide who's relevant, who gets to speak, who doesn't. Everybody gets a say. So given this information, and I will say I've been very busy in the last 10 days with people feeling this has been unfair. So I would move that now that we know this is what's happened, I would like to see a new public hearing. And I would hope that my council would support that.
We have a motion up there. So you're advocating to start all over again?
I certainly am.
Oh, with no additional cost. Okay, could you read that motion, please?
I move that the administration be directed to prepare a new bylaw and advertise a new public hearing in the March 13th, 2018 council meeting that no additional cost to the applicant be.
Good. Thank you. If you would give the mic up, I would, Deputy Reeve Gautreaux.
So I'll be supporting my colleague on that motion as well. So just to let her know, she has my support.
And anyone else like to comment? Councillor McIler.
Can I just ask, through the Reeve to council, is there a difference legally between somebody that signed a petition, sent in a letter, and stood up to speak? Or is one as good as the other?
Through the Reeve, the weight that council or a board gives to any one of those pieces of evidence is up to council or the board. It's all something that council can take into consideration, but you're entitled to give different weight if somebody has come and answered questions in front of council in person versus signed their name on a petition that they may or may not have understood. And also they write a letter, and it's not just a form letter, but it's their own words, obviously, that I've heard council are giving different weights to how that evidence comes through. So that's something you're entitled to weigh in your own mind. My other comment, Mr. Reeve, is it legally it wouldn't be necessary to do a new bylaw or a new public hearing. It would be open to council to reopen the public hearing and deal with the letters and information in the letters and allow people and to restrict the reopening to those matters as opposed to an entirely new public hearing.
Thank you. Yeah, I kind of wondered. I think that to me is a little more streamlined way of getting to the same thing. All the groundwork is done, and we just open the hearing up, hear from the letters, and continue on. So I don't think I'm going to support that motion. I would support the motion to reopen the hearing. Anyway, any further comments? Councillor Kissel, to close.
So I'm looking for your support, but I also want everyone to understand that that motion was put together with the help of our council. So that's why it was presented that way. So it's important that we understand that I didn't just write this on my own, guys. Okay?
No, I appreciate, but I think also if I can, well, I'll let you clarify. I wasn't there.
Yeah, no, indeed. So Councillor Kissel is absolutely correct. This is based on advice that all of council received from our own administration. I've learned something new today. If you read or interpret the way the Act is written, public hearings have to be before second reading. I think we've heard from this legal counsel, from Ms. Clower, that's not the case if it's limited to what you're talking about, what your limited scope is, rather than rescinding second reading and starting over, pressing the reset. And so, absolutely, Councillor Kissel's correct. That's based on advice, but I think the advice we're receiving today is that we can just reopen an existing public hearing and limit it to the letters that we're talking about and go from there.
So then, could, if Councillor Kissel so decides, could she get further advice on another motion, should she decide? But I'll allow Deputy Reeve Gautreaux to speak.
Well, that's where I was just going to kind of go with it. If that's the case, then, you know, will she take a friendly motion to get your support, Mr. Reeve, you know, on maybe just not hitting the entire reset button then, if that's what our legal counsel is saying, and just go to what has been presented to us forward. So I don't know if it's a friendly motion that you know, that you kind of threw out there as well. Maybe we can get some wordsmithing.
In fact, if I just asked Tyler to switch over, I think he's already got one prepared. And if need be, what would easily take place is if Councillor Kissel withdrew her original motion and proposed this motion, and nobody objected to the original motion being withdrawn, this achieves the same thing, if that's her desire.
Yep, and don't feel pressured. You make whatever motion you feel happy with. So, Councillor Kissel.
So, I guess I'm a little confused, people. We have two lawyers, each giving us advice. They're not equal. Where do I sit? I need 5 minutes, please. I need 5 minutes.
Can I just ask a quick question before we take 5 minutes? Do you mind?
Certainly.
If this motion, trying to just understand it as well, so that when we come back, it's a little clearer to me, does this motion reopen public hearing this big? Or does it just reopen for to consider the letters, the three letters that were missed?
And through the Reeve, correct, I would be recommending that if that's the motion, it's obviously up to Councillor Kissel what she prefers to do, that it be specific that it will be limited to discussing the issues raised in the letters, and I would suggest that there be some specificity around those letters so everyone knows what they're supposed to talk about. You're not just replowing original ground from the first hearing.
Thank you. Councillor Ray.
Through the Reeve to Council. So does that mean then that we would not open it to allow anyone else new to speak?
Through the Reeve, anyone could come and speak to the issues raised in the letters. That would be the point of this reopening of the hearing, is the letters would be received by Council, and anyone that wanted to speak to those letters would be entitled to do so as they would be in the normal course had they been submitted to Council in the first public hearing.
Councillor Shu.
That raises another question. There was some, I believe, some new information brought in by staff after the hearing was closed, too. Was it this one or the other one?
I think that might have been the other one.
The other one, okay. I just wanted to clarify. Okay.
Okay, we'll take 5-10 minutes, and then we'll come back.
We'll be back.
And go to, is there? Oh, Councillor Henn. As soon as Council, there he is. Thank you. Okay, we'll call the meeting back to order, and Councillor Kissel.
I'd like to move that administration be directed to prepare a new bylaw and advertise a new public hearing for the March 13th, 2018 council meeting at no additional cost to the applicant.
Any comments? Any comments? Seeing none? All in favor? And recorded vote.
In favor.
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 Opposed.
In favor.
And that is passed. Thank you. We will go to Councillor Wright for I-1. If you could read your notice of motion into the record. You don't have to do the background information.
You don't want me to read all seven pages? Everyone have their pillow?
a brief. Okay.
So this is a creation of a list of electors.
Well, excuse me. When you guys are done your meeting, could we reconvene, please?
Thank you.
Okay, so it's a motion to create a creation of a list of electors. So whereas democratic principles and rights must be preserved and, where possible, enhanced, whereas democratic principles and the rights of all residents are based on fair elections, whereas the National Register of Electors is a database of Canadians who are qualified to vote, it contains basic information about each person, name, gender, date of birth, address, and unique identifier. The register may also be used to produce list of electors for provinces, territories, municipalities, and school boards that have signed agreements for that purpose as permitted by the Canada Elections Act and provincial statutes. Whereas Elections Canada produces preliminary lists of electors for federal elections, by-elections, and referendums using information from the National Register of Electors, returning officers then update the lists for each riding during the revision period. Whereas Rocky View County has not created any such proper list of eligible voters, and that a lack of list of voters in any jurisdiction can make it seem to be unfair. Whereas there is a belief at least some among at least some Rocky View County residents that there has been improper voting in one or more previous Rocky View County elections, whereas the creation, use, and maintenance of a list of electors is dependent on a municipal bylaw passed by council, LAEAS.section 49(1) and 51. If a list of electors is prepared, the bylaw must also prescribe procedures and forms governing the enumeration of electors. This should include policy regarding enumeration, collection methods, collection frequency, type of information collected, data security, permanent storage, retention, access, list revision, list distribution, and use. Whereas under LAEA 49(2)(AB), the county may also, by bylaw, enter into an agreement with the Elections Canada to receive information that will assist the county in compiling a list of electors. In return, the county is required to provide Elections Alberta information for the purpose of revising the Register of Electors under the Election Act. Therefore, it be resolved that Rocky View County create and use a Rocky View County resident list of electors, voters list, in the next and all subsequent RVC elections. And I'd be glad to read the background, too. No, I'm just kidding.
No, it's okay. I got something to do this month. Thank you very much. Very well done. Very well written. Councillor, who is that guy?
Me.
Gautreau.
Deputy Reeve, sorry.
Thank you, Reeve. Just a clarification. You said Elections Canada and it's Elections Alberta. So the county may also, by bylaw, enter into an agreement with Elections Alberta to receive information. I just wanted to catch it.
And administration will do that. Let's go to item J1.
Good afternoon, Reeve and council members. My name is Oksana Newman, and I'm the file manager for this application. The proposed subdivision is situated in Division 7, just east of the city of Airdrie and north of the city of Calgary. Specifically, it's located on the west side of Range Road 14, approximately 0.41 kilometers north of Big Hill Springs Road. The proposed subdivision will result in a 24-acre lot and a 58.77-acre remainder. The purpose of the division is to accommodate a new and distinct use, in this case, a horticultural operation. The aerial photo shows the current layout of the property. There are two existing homes on the current parcel. If the subdivision is approved, each resulting lot will have one house, its own well and septic, and any associated accessory buildings. In terms of land use, Council approved the redesignation of proposed Lot 1 to agricultural holdings on October 10, 2017, to accommodate a new agricultural use as horticultural development. There are numerous parcels of agricultural holdings in the area, a small scattering of a variety of other land use types, along with larger areas of ranch and farm. This contour map helps illustrate the topography of the site and vicinity, showing rolling hilly terrain. There is a riparian setback area that crosses the parcel. The remainder parcel contains the majority of the setback area, and proposed Lot 1 contains a small area in the northeast corner. the proposed horticultural area operation for Lot 1 should consider and avoid this setback area. In terms of historic subdivision, the subject 82.77-acre parcel was created in 1984. Oh, I'm sorry, that's the soils map. And the historic subdivision map. And finally, landowner circulation. In terms of public notice, the application was circulated to 16 adjacent landowners by the county. One letter of support for the subdivision was received from the neighbor adjacent to the east. However, this letter did also note concerns for water use of the proposed eventual horticultural operation. Should council decide to approve the application, the list of recommended conditions are provided in option one. These conditions include plan of survey, cash in lieu of municipal reserves for Lot 1, transportation off-site levy for 3 acres of Lot 1, subdivision endorsement fee, and any taxes owing. This concludes my presentation. I'm available for any questions you may have.
Thank you. Is that your first time in front of us?
It is.
Congratulations. Thank well done. Thank you and welcome.
Thank you.
Councillor Hinn.
Hello.
It's that Excedrin stuff that he's...
I just make a motion here. Is that the deal that we're after? Yep.
Is in the report for conditions as written?
Yeah, I would move option one, that subdivision application PL 201-70166 be approved with conditions noted in Appendix A.
Well done. Go, Councillor Hansen.
Question. I know it's through the Reeve. It's probably done during development permit time, but the concern about the water, if it is a distinct agricultural use that is really water intensive, do we have any responsibility at subdivision time to seek a condition that would not draw down the entire water table in that quarter or section of quarters?
That's something we would look at through the development permit at that time. It is not deemed a consideration for a subdivision.
But do we have to put a condition in a subdivision to protect that?
No, Mr. Chairman, we do not.
Thank you.
Any further comments or questions? Would you like to close, Councillor Hinn? You've done a good job so far.
I move to close.
Sorry I led you right into that. No, it's okay. Sorry, buddy, I led you right into that one. I'm going to call the question. All in favor? That is carried. Can I get a motion for item K1? Maybe I'll ask Deputy Reeve to read that in.
Sure. Why are you picking on me today? The council moving to Canberra to consider a negotiated agreement with the Glenbow Ranch Area Structure Plan pursuant to the following section of Freedom of Information and Protection of Privacy Act, Section 21, Disclosure Harmful to Intergovernment Relations, Section 23, Local Public Body Confidence, and Section 24, Advice from Officials.
Confidences. Sorry.
Okay. Well, do you have a motion to put back up on the board for us? Oh, yep. Can we get a good point?
I move we come out of camera.
All in favor? That is carried. And if I could get someone to make that motion. There we go. Councillor Hinn.
I move that the mediated settlement agreement, Appendix A, reached with the City of Calgary to resolve the Section 690 appeal filed against the Glenbow Ranch Area Structure Plan be approved. Item 2, the county's participation in a regional recreation study in the northwest portion of the City of Calgary and adjacent lands within the county, which includes Bears Paw and the Glenbow Ranch Area Structure Plan areas, be approved as per Appendix A. And the in-camera report, the mediated settlement agreement for the Glenbow Ranch Area Structure Plan, and the discussion remain confidential pursuant to a Municipal Government Act Section 1972, public presence at meetings, and B, the Freedom of Information and Protection of Privacy Act, Section 21, disclosure harmful to business interests of a third party, Section 23, notifying third party, and Section 24, time limit and notice of decision until the agreement has been ratified by both parties.
Thank you. Any discussion? And
I see none.
All in favor? And that is carried. And I would like to add, should we send this to the Minister of Municipal Affairs to show that we have approved it through the mediation process? I think we should.
He gets value for his money.
Gives him something to do.
Mr. Reeve, once the agreement has been ratified by the city, then we will be jointly submitting to the Municipal Government Board. So
I'm
I think it would be
the Minister of Municipal Affairs.
Would that be premature?
Can you leave that with us, Mr. Reeve? We certainly will take it under advisement. I think the caution we're having is the fact that we have to wait until it's ratified by the City of Calgary. And then once it's done, it's public, so then we certainly have much more freedom.
Yeah, no, I understand that. Thank you. I need one more motion for the day. Mr. I keep wanting to call you Mr. You're very dignified.
Counselor Hanson to you.
Counselor Hanson.
I move that we adjourn this excellent meeting.
Move to adjourn. All in favor. And bye-bye.